Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Hello.
Dying, but thanks for asking. No. How have you been?
I'm also dying, but thank you for asking.
Wow, that was really dark.
Yeah. The joys of being a student in late this November. Hey, Andrew, did you get your council jacket?
Yeah, my friend got it. Thanks.
Yay. Oh, did you just get the one from this year or did you get last year's too?
No, I think she just grabbed the one from this year, so. Honestly, I don't know if I'll ever see those jackets because, you know, COVID, but we can hope.
I'll cross my fingers. It's just sitting in my office, so, you know, whenever. If I ever have to go to Saskatchewan, I'll just drop it off somewhere for you.
I appreciate it.
Katie, if you ever come to BC, can you bring mine? Because I think Joel's just hanging on.
Yeah. Me and Alana actually talked about going to BC when COVID's done.
Yeah, y'all can stay away right now.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I mean, Jason Kenney has no problem with us going, but we will not.
Did you not listen to Kenny's press conference today?
Did you say you can't travel? I listened to half of it and then I had policy.
I don't know about the travel stuff, but he cracked down more than I thought they would.
Yeah, we are restricted to local travel only. Which kind of sucks because all of our grocery stores are out and we're not supposed to go to Kelowna. Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Like the weird thing with like interprovince travel is that technically you can't like restrict it unless you start getting into like emergency act and because, you know, not constitutional. Yeah. There's like rights to travel, but like the BC government has strongly said, please don't come. But
yeah, it's an advisory rather than an order, which is nice.
Charter rights.
Yeah, exactly. But, that's what I was looking for. Thanks.
Awesome. We are rolling into 6 o'clock here. So welcome everyone. We're off with. So I'd like to respectfully acknowledge that our university and our students union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We're grateful to be on Cree, Dene, Salto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territory, specifically the ancestral space of the Papas Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work toward the decolonization of Indigenous knowledges and traditions. Awesome. So with that, at this moment, I'll just ask that all guests of the room register to the chat here with your name and association. And I'm just pulling up our attendance here. Just 1 second, sorry. Okay, we'll start things off with President Agarwal.
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Draper?
He is not Vice able to President? Be.
No? Okay. Vice President Lay?
Present.
Excellent. Vice President Cron?
Present.
Great. Vice President Kidd?
Present.
Governor Conrad?
Yeah, I'm present.
Excellent. Councillor Carbajal? Perfect. Councillor Dixon? Councillor Dixon?
Hello. Sorry, my head.
That's okay. I see you trying to speak. Awesome. Councillor DeGrano.
Here.
Perfect. Councillor Marquise.
Present.
Thank you. Councillor Oliveira.
Present.
Present.
Your boot.
Here.
Oh, perfect. Councilor Burhani? Councilor Burhani? Councilor Saretsky?
Present.
Perfect. Councilor Matoska?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Ackerman? Councilor Ackerman? Councilor Baticki?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Bid?
Present.
Councilor Bose?
Here.
Excellent. Thank you. I'll just ask that those please mute their microphones. Councilor Hariharan? Councilor Hariharan? Councilor Montero?
Present.
Excellent. Councilor Buchanan, I saw your note there. Councilor Filipovich? Councilor Filipovich? Councilor Orvald?
Here.
Councilor Brandwine?
Here.
Councilor Enerson? Perfect. Councilor Badesha?
Present.
Councilor Berzash? Councilor Berzash? Councilor Dillon? Councilor Dillon? Having issues getting in. Okay, Kristen, would you be able to check the waiting list? Kristen Fotang or Councilor Fotang? Okay, Councilor Kamani?
Here.
Councilor Corday? Councilor Corday? Okay, myself, I'm here. Mark? General Manager Dumichel? I'm assuming he's here.
Mark is here. I think he's having some internet issues, he said, which is interesting. So we'll see about the presentation slides. Just FYI, sorry, Mr. Speaker.
That's okay. Awesome. Okay, so with this, we've got four presentations on our agenda tonight. So we will need to be suspending standing orders to allow this. Perfect. So Vice President Cron motions to suspend standing orders. Could I just get a secondary, please? Perfect. Thank you, Councillor Saretsky. So with that, standing orders are suspended, which is wonderful. We can slide. Oh, thank you, Councillor Dillon. I got your note there. We can slide right into the first presentation here.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, may I ask a question?
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, so since standing orders are suspended, are guests of council allowed to ask questions like during points in the presentation as well as members of council?
Well, we have suspended standing orders, and I think that would be very beneficial. So with council's like permission, yeah, we could totally do that.
Okay.
I think that would allow for like more fulsome and like representative questions, especially with the right timing so that we're not bouncing over ideas. I like that. Thank you. Okay, we'll do that. But yeah, awesome. We'll go right into our first presentation here. I do just need a secondary for Vice President Cron's motion to allow a presentation from Mark Dumichel. Councillor Orvald, I'll give that one to you. Thank you. With that, Mark, floor is all yours, if you'd like.
Thanks, Jared. I'm sorry for the delay. As you could probably tell from my earlier image, I was hoping to do this from the actual theater itself, but Wi-Fi issues interrupted that plan. So you have to look at me in weird shadow here. But don't worry, it's mostly going to be a presentation. We have a lot to cover tonight. We wanted to give council and FCFC the full meal deal in terms of explaining the theater project. We will probably stop from time to time throughout it to give people a chance to ask questions, and we will ask questions. We will allow for questions. We will stop for some questions as we go along too. So first, welcome everyone. Some of our staff are listening in too, because we asked them if they wanted to find out more about the theater. We said they could come and watch this presentation. Like I said, we've got both, not only student counselors, but SCFC, and I'm sure that the Gateway's here somewhere too, which is great. Let me see here. So I'm gonna be mailing out this presentation. I meant to do it beforehand, but I because of my wireless problems, I didn't have a chance. That's okay though, because I'm just gonna present that to you instead. So you have to excuse me. I'm a little out of it because of my issues here. Let's see here. Let me just get, I beg your indulgence while I just get this presentation set up here.
Mark, if you're able to send that out, then I can forward it to the members of SCF committee as well, which I think would be awesome. So
I'll do it during the first, I'll make it available during the first break here.
Awesome, thank you.
Let's put it on desktop. To share. Okay, there we go. So, here we go. So, we're here today to talk about the Meyer Horowitz Theater renewal. This is a comprehensive review. We're going to be covering lots of stuff today. Let's see here. I wanted to say on behalf of the members of the design team, I wanted to thank Council for the opportunity to present. We really appreciate it. You're going to meet some of them. You're going to hear about all of them and meet some of them later today. The format of this is I'm going to present. I'm going to do the bulk of the presenting, but we're going to be cutting to various others as we go, other members of the team as we go through, to go into some of the details, in particular the architect and Brennan as well. So I'm just gonna get started here. Here's what we're gonna cover today. So the first thing, I think it's important to understand the history and what the mission of the theater is. So I'm gonna talk a bit about that. Alana's then gonna talk a little bit about the history of the proposal and the various consultation that we ran over the last 3 years. I'm gonna start talking about the purpose and program of a renewed theater. And by program, I mean like what we actually do with the theater, what we do in the theater. Brennan's gonna also has a brief presentation to give a little bit more detail on that. I'm gonna briefly talk about the key design and sustainability considerations. Then we're gonna pass it off to our architect, who's gonna talk, Stephen, who's gonna talk about their design of the new and improved theater. I'm going to then come back. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the environmental sustainability. Our building planner, Aaron, will talk to you about the social sustainability, and then I will come back and talk about the economic sustainability. And then we will have the unpleasant matter of the bill, which we'll cover towards the very end, and then we'll cover the timeline of the project if it is approved in a few weeks. Does anybody have any questions or things they want to let me know about before we get started? I can't see any hands, so I'm going to trust Jared to tell me to shut up and listen if I need to. All right, so today, first we're going to start off with the history and mission. So throughout this whole process, one of the things that I've used as kind of a North Star on this project is the original building document, the Building Planning Commission documents from 1964. And I've used this before in a presentation to council, but I still feel it's very, very relevant. I actually am continually amazed and awed by the wisdom of the students of the time and how eloquent they were in expressing the value of sub and of the various components of sub. So in that document, they talk about the theater as a good theater is designed to serve a multitude of functions that increase the quality of life for the whole university community. It develops otherwise dormant sides of personalities of those using it. It brings together and unites in common activities large groups of otherwise unrelated people, and it allows for programs beneficial for all those participating in them. It talks about how the theater, a strong theater brings honor to a university, and also how it is really, it helps with the academic mission of the university in terms of giving them the opportunity to have experiences they haven't had before, that it is the theater in itself is a laboratory of social learning. So the theater has a very long and storied history. It is, the theater and I share a birthday, so I'm very excited about that. It is also 53 years old. And it's been a central part of Edmonton's arts and cultural scene for most of that run. The theater has hosted literally thousands of events. I was talking to Brennan today, and he estimated it's probably in the 15 to 20,000 range over that 50 years. Everything from lectures and debates to plays, to music, to dance and variety shows. We've had a lot of CBC programs filmed here. We've done film showings, and we've done a lot, just a ton of student group-based activities. Dozens of student groups, the engineering students, the med students, the pharmacy students, the debate club, the Arab Students Association, Campus Crusade for Christ, Mixed Chorus, a whole bunch of modern dance clubs, the ski club, Indian Students Associations, a whole bunch of performing arts groups. They've all used the theater over the years. Now, this is all going to be new to you because we have changed, the theater has evolved over the years, and we've done a lot of research into what the theater used to be and what it could be. And we're going to talk a bit about that today. So this is going to date me, but back when the theater was very active within the popular live music scene, we had some incredible people come through here. Everyone from Sarah McLachlan to Radiohead to Green Day. I mean, I know that dates me. What can I say? I'm 53. But that reflected a real high time for the theater in terms of its contribution to both the university and the city arts scene. We think it's something to aspire to. When I was a student, the irony is when I was a student here and these guys were just, when we got them, they were just getting started. So I often didn't even know who they are. And then 5 years later, I'm like, damn, I missed that show. We have an incredible history at the theater and in Dinwiddie as well, of presenting up and coming acts. So it's been one of the missions we have for this project is to recapture a bit of that glory, not for the glory of the glory days, but rather because it was a great way in which this campus forged a community. So I'm gonna pass it to Alana to talk about the history of how we got to where we are and about the consultation that's gone into this proposal. Alana?
Thank you very much. You're controlling the slides over there. So
yeah, just tell me when to get at you.
Thank you. So essentially the way that we got to where we are today, not just with the theater, but with, you know, SCF and all that you're seeing here today has taken a couple of years. And what has essentially happened, you know, in a word, is that there has been an evolving of the idea of what the theater means, what sub means, what student-controlled spaces mean, as we have, you know, put different things out there, tried and failed, and come back ultimately better, I think. And with what we have today being, I'd say, a landmark in terms of campus sustainability and, you know, improvements to student life and student governance autonomy and all sorts of things like that. So I'd love to give you just a little bit of an overview just so that we can understand the history of the consultation that's gone on, because I think that that's very important, right? We need to make sure that this is something that addresses a concrete student need and that this is something that students want. And to see the evolution of that, I think is important. So just kind of launching in here, I'll just give a very quick overview. And if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to go more into it. But of course, we're talking about SCF, so I'll just go through these fairly quickly. But so essentially, the first rendition of an attempt to deal with our deferred maintenance issues, especially within the theater and different issues that we're seeing and how that relates to student life, was something called SEI, the Student Event Initiative. This happened in 2018. Essentially, as you can see on the slide, its first goal was to revitalize campus, the community on campus with better programming, sparked primarily by a renewal of the theater. So of course, the proposal included a student discount program for events, event granting, other sorts of programming funding. Yes, you'd see $100,000 in that, as well as then the theater renovation. And I think it's worth noting that, you know, in the top of the question was talking about the theater renovation and how that was going to be the source of all of these other initiatives. And so eventually it narrowly failed at referendum. But I think that, again, learning from that in history there. And essentially there was all, so essentially it failed. But there was a lot of good consultation that came afterwards from a report that was done on the referendum, sort of taking a tally of over 1,000 students who had voted or not voted, and whichever way they voted, sort of to see why. And essentially, I believe that the referendum itself was a form of consultation, very much so. I think it's the greatest form of consultation, and it's very interesting to read into that report and what was failing with that. And again, I'm happy to go into more if anyone has any questions, but essentially we know that a lot of the issues came with communication of value and ultimately, a lack of communication is really the best way to describe it. So I'll continue. So in 2019, then the next year, the Student Spaces Levy was proposed. And so essentially based on feedback from students from SEI and directly trying to address the question of deferred maintenance for non-academic spaces like SUB, Student Spaces Levy was proposed. And basically it was as follows. So the Students Union could use the funds for capital projects and deferred maintenance in Students Union controlled spaces, such as the theater. It could be used to fund other non-academic spaces, though, as well throughout campus, since these were not often prioritized by the university. And these projects, though, which was an interesting idea, could be directed through or established directly through student proposals. So essentially, students would have more of that hands-on control, which we're even seeing now in SCF, but more on that in a second. Basically, council declined to put it to referendum. If you want Mark's hot takes, he has them, and he'll give them to you later as to why that failed. But it was students were well consulted on that proposal as well. So then, of course, we have the Sustainability and Capital Fund that you see now. And this has, like I've said, been kind of the culmination of a lot of growing student concerns, like we're seeing around EDI, the climate crisis, you know, needs for student life, as well as, you know, recognizing a need for accessibility and all the sorts of responsibility that students are expecting to see from their Students Union and SUB. So key aspects, which I've already gone over a fair bit, is essentially you know, that the fund would support Students Union capital projects and their capital renewal needs, like I had mentioned in my presentation last time. I don't need to go into that too much more for you today. Capital projects will need to meet certain criteria, as I had described, so criteria that are based on exactly what students voted for in, through the campaign documents, as well as through the question itself that went to referendum. Of course, it has established the Green Fund, which is, like I've said, underway, just about, and as well, this consultation process was also kind of completed at referendum, as you can see, which was great. And for your information, both referendums in 2018 and in 2020 drew in over 7,000 student voters, so lots of reach there. And like we've said, SCF is a groundbreaking approach to capital management and sustainability, and it is about so much more than just this project, although we're happy to talk about this project here today. So essentially, it is important to note that the Horowitz Theater Project in relating this back to consultation, has been an explicit or a potential part of each of these proposals. So basically, except for SEI, where the renovation of the theater was the main capital project and the main sort of the crown of the whole thing, none of the proposals so far have mandated that the theater would be something that would naturally happen as a result of the referendum. So that basically means that council right here and SCF committee, as kind of the oversight of the fund, are able to choose which projects they want going forward, which is an important aspect of student choice. But basically, it's up to council to assess whether the Horowitz Renewal Project would be the best way to achieve the larger goal of the proposal. You can see more here on the slide. I don't need to read the slide to you. But essentially, as a result of all of the student feedback that's been collected, the proposal incorporates the best elements of all of the big three goals that we've been pursuing in response to this feedback, which is reinvigorating campus life and community, addressing subs-deferred maintenance issues, and making real and significant contributions to sustainability. Moving along. So essentially, to recap the scope of the consultation, thousands of students have been consulted via surveys and referenda and focus groups and all sorts of things. Hundreds of students have been consulted in more meaningful and kind of in-depth ways that can't be accomplished just through referenda and surveys. So for the student events initiative, of course, it went to students' council multiple times. It went to referendum, was seen by, you know, over 7,000 students, as well as a campaign that was done primarily by student volunteers and ambassadors, actually completely by student volunteers and ambassadors, as well as there was that post-referendum survey that really enabled us at the SU to learn from you know, what happened with SEI and the referendum.
I'm hopping in. Councillor Bowes has a question real quick.
Oh, apologies. Yes, Councillor Bowes?
Can you folks hear me? Sorry, my internet isn't working properly.
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, no, I just wanted to mention one thing. On the slide of 2018, we saw it was mentioned how the vote failed narrowly in 2018. I just wanted to point that out. In 2020, it also passed narrowly. Yeah, just that. Thank you.
Sweet.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Bowes. So moving along, the student spaces levy was... consultation was conducted through surveys, through focus groups, including three sessions, I believe, at GovCamp, which most of us here have participated in, as well as at the Alberta Student Leadership Summit. Student representatives were also consulted in at COFA, generally the Council of Faculty Associations, as well as I think all but one individual faculty associations were consulted, and Students' Council saw it multiple times. The Sustainability and Capital Fund likewise was tested at referendum and during campaigns. Students were told extensively about this, and ultimately it passed. Students were also informed through surveys, and we were informed of their opinions through surveys as well, sort of general in terms of SCF, but mentions of the theater all throughout, you know, quite explicit that the theater is a deferred maintenance issue that would, you know, likely be something that students ought to look at addressing, but again, the choice finally being council's, and also student representatives were informed and consulted with this as well. So essentially, what did we learn? So we learned what students value primarily, and what was learned is that accessibility of the theater for students and student groups is very important, as well as flexibility of the theater to serve a diverse body of students and a wide range of student needs. Affordability and value for money is also very important, as well as improved student life and well-being generally, as well as, of course, like we're seeing with SCF, the sustainability improvements to capital assets, that being environmental, social, and economic. And then what we've kind of seen that students believe is that they believe that deferred maintenance is a real and ongoing problem, and that a permanent and sustainable solution is needed to be found. Environmental sustainability has to be central for all capital maintenance projects, and the financial constraints of students must be considered. So, students have wanted that student spaces they wanted student spaces to be as inclusive as possible and as welcoming as possible, and to positively contribute to the wellness of students generally. It's desired that any extra fees be kept as low as possible, and also that there be clear accountability and oversight. I think that's back to you, Mark.
It is. Oops. Duh. Just, oh, okay, I wasn't muted. Okay, I thought I was muted. Sorry about that, folks. I'm having all kinds of tech problems because it didn't work out quite the way that we had hoped. So let me just get back in to this. There we go. So the purpose and program of the theater. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we see the general role of the theater in terms of campus life, and then Brennan's going to talk a little bit more about the details. So again, I'll refer to the original planning documents for the building, which state it pretty well. A good theater is designed to serve a multitude of functions and increases the quality of life of the whole university community. It brings together and unites in common activities large groups of otherwise unrelated people, and it allows for programs beneficial to all those participating in them. So what does that really mean? So the theater is really about community. The first thing is joining students, these groups of unrelated people that document talks about, in a common experience. It connects them both to each other and to the larger university community. Our architect Stephen was telling me about his alma mater and how they ask him for money. And he's like, they didn't really do anything for me. I didn't really feel part of the community. So why would I contribute to them? And this is one of the key things about having a good campus community and strong student life. It's one of the key benefits for the university community as a whole. It begins that lifelong connection to the university. The theater's also, our theater in particular, has acted as a bridge to the larger Edmonton community. Not only do we open our shows to the members of the larger community, but the larger community brings things onto campus for students to see. That's been a strong historical role of the theater, and it's been a big part of how it contributes to university community. The theater is also about growth, and by growth I don't mean making more money. I mean it's about more than just entertaining students. It's about giving both student patrons and student performers the opportunity to learn and experience things new to them. It gives students the opportunity to see if a student group puts on a production, it gives them the opportunity to see what it's like to do that and what it's like back of house. For students who attend it, exposes them to new forms of art, to new ideas, and all kinds of things. So what does the future of programming for the theater look like if we renovate it? Well, generally over the last 10 or 15 years, the program of the theater has, the student-focused program of the theater has declined as the theater's aged. The theater's still very busy, 150 to 200 nights, days a year, there's someone in the theater doing something. But the theater's moved into becoming a venue provider, a rental house, rather than acting as a proactive presenter of things of interest to students. That's the number one thing that we have to change. Any renewal for the theater must be matched by a new model of programming that allows us to better engage with students. What we do in the theater needs greater curation, and it needs much more intentional programming, Brennan's going to talk about that in a little bit. Key to that change in our programming is that we do a lot better job engaging with others. That means more partnerships. It means keeping costs for student groups exceptionally low. We are actually, what Brennan and I are working on is how to make the theater available to student users on campus at cost, so that we're not running it to make a profit from students. We're running it to provide a service to students. It has the side benefit of actually being very economically viable for external renters, but I'll talk about that later. At the same time, we must capitalize on existing revenue sources and seek to grow our business. And we seek to do this in our typical off periods. So intersession, spring and summer, exam periods. These are not times when students are going to be active doing productions, or student groups are going to be active in the theater. And there's a lot of, we've assessed that there is an untapped market there, which I'll get to a little bit later. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to switch it over to Brennan. If I can figure out how to stop sharing this, because it won't let me look at the other screen. Let's see, do that. I'm going to pass this over to Brennan to talk about a little bit more about programming. And let me just try to turn this off. There we go. Oh, Brennan's got it. There you go.
All right. Hey, folks, can you hear me?
You're very soft, Brennan.
Okay. Turn it up there. Hello. Okay. So thanks for allowing me to present today. This is the first time I've presented to council in 9 years. So apologies if I'm a little rusty, but happy to be here. So as Mark said, my name is Brennan. I'm the director of conferencing and events. Under my portfolio falls our student programming team. And over the last 2 months, we've been hard at work trying to come up with an initial thought or plan for what we could do post renovation for programming in the theater. So first of all, I'll run you through just kind of the goals that we initially took when we looked at this program. I mean, obviously our biggest thing will be to bring more student events to the theater. As Mark kind of alluded to, over the years, the Students Union has made in the last 20 or 30 years, we've made like different strategic changes in our direction of what we're doing for student events. And about 10 years ago, we decided to increase the amount of student events we did, but with that, we did not increase the amount of events we did in the theater. So I kind of look at this as another opportunity for us to rejig the plan for student events. And a big thing too, or one of our goals would definitely be to activate the theater as kind of the premier non-academic space on campus. Lots of people talk about, like, you can definitely hold things like TEDx's in lecture halls. However, if you have holding it in a proper theater, there's definitely, it makes the experience a lot better. We talk a lot about, like, university is not just about academics. So we need spaces on campus that would allow us to hold non-academic events to add to the university experience. And with this too, we also want to increase the large scale programming on campus. So since I've been in the events industry, which is about 10 or 12 years, I've found that really large scale events have sort of disappeared, or not disappeared, but they've become less and less common. A lot of times people are doing things with like two or three of their friends, or there's much broader reach for smaller events happening and for people to kind of like stay in their circle or their bubble. Large scale programming would allow people to come out, meet new people, learn new experiences. So we've kind of taken this as like almost a holistic approach to what we're doing with programming, with the theater being kind of the key or the cornerstone of our plan. And then finally, I always like to identify like how are we keeping this in line with the SU strategic plan. I've been on the SU strategic planning committee twice in the last 10 years. So that's very important to me. But some of the key standouts for me is we provide and create space for students to relax, study, and socialize. We organize events and programs to build community on campus. We want to support and encourage diverse programming across campuses. We want to remove barriers to community involvement and participation in programming. And of course, we want to inspire change for the world and thrive in a diverse and intellectual community. So overall, these are kind of our steering goals for any sort of programming plan that we come up with for the theater post-renovation. So we've taken, or when we kind of started putting this plan together, we've taken a four-pillar approach to programming. So the first pillar would be a music series. And of course we are talking concerts there, but I think there's the ability for us to break out of the kind of popular music category. The Horwitz used to host things like jazz or symphony orchestra, choir, and there's a lot of students on campus that are engaged in those areas. So it'd be a great opportunity for us to focus on different areas of music as well. A speaker series. Again, we've had one good success this year with Angela Davis. I think we can build off that, but looking at kind of what are like the themes and topics that students are interested in, and then engaging in a meaningful way to have some sort of continual speaker series that is available for people to come out to, and hopefully learn something new. A movie series. Now, historically, we've done a movie where we've had kind of a movie night program in the theater fairly regularly. It's usually every second Tuesday night. But I think we can get bigger than that. We've kind of plateaued in the few years about how our movie nights go. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to look at like film festivals or new movies, or partnering with things like the Fine Arts Department, that sort of thing, to expand our movie programming. And then our final pillar for programming would be a student group led series. And this would really be a partnership, but we want to, historically the theater has been quite hard for student groups to break into, at least in the last 10 or 12 years since I've been here. And there's a variety of reasons for that, but I think that we can put resources as a students union into making it a lot easier for student groups, because the student groups are, I mean, more in touch with what students would want to do for the night. So if we can create opportunities, and it can work both ways. I mean, helps promote those groups, but also helps us bring programming to campus. And we really look at that as like a key part of our plan. So a few things of like what this would look like for us. The first one would be consistent scheduling and ticket releases. And we want to do a monthly program at a minimum. We think there's opportunity to do at least one event per series per month in the theater. But for some of those series, we can do much more than that. We were talking the other day about the speaker series, for instance. There's no reason why we can't do like early afternoon or even late morning speaker series with a renovated theater. One of the issues we have with the current theater is we really have a very hard time supporting more than one event per day. And that's just because the changeover between events is so great. As part of the planning process, we've been very deliberate about making sure that we can easily flip the theater as quickly as we can get guests in and out, so that we can have multiple programs per day. And that opens up a lot of opportunities for us. I mean, historically, we've seen a lot of programming in the theater take place at night, but it's not always been the greatest time for students, because they leave campus and then getting them to come back can be hard, especially during the weekdays. But if we have opportunities available for programs at, you know, noon, 1, 2, 3 o'clock that only run, you know, 45 to an hour and a half, that could be something that they could build into their schedule and gives them a bit of a break while they're also on campus. Another big thing would be a student consultation framework. We find that this is kind of one of the more difficult things that we've been struggling with, and we're going to be spending the next year to really hammer this out. And it's going to look different for every single series. I mean, I think student consultation for something like a movie series could be a lot more passive, like surveys, using perks, talking to the folks who are coming out to movies of what they're looking for. But then when we get into something with like a student group series, we have opportunities, I think, in the SU to already, we already have things like the student group granting program, which we could expand on, then involving the programming in the theater as well. For things like the speaker series, I mean, I can really see us like some sort of steering committee being struck to make that happen, so that we can start identifying themes and topics that people are interested in, and then also crowdsourcing who they want to listen to. I mean, there is like kind of a traditional like speaker lineup, especially over the last few months, like the agencies are always sending us lists of people who are involved in the current advocacy efforts of the time. But I think that like students are more, they have more ideas than that, whether we do something like look at YouTube stars or just profs from different classes, that sort of thing. I don't know. I used to be an economics student, and like, I would love to see Gordon Lee give a lecture in the theater one of these days. So break-even budgeting and partner funding opportunities, really what we're saying here is like we are going to look at our actual costs for what the event is, and then we're not going to be over, especially related to the student group series, we're not going to be trying to like get any sort of profit margin on that. And with partner funding opportunities, really that plays into sponsorship. If we're instituting a program where we're talking about between 25 and 50 event days, there's no reason why we can't get a variety of sponsors on board that can help us out with that. And I think the Students' Union working as kind of to curate this entire program, we have a lot of buying power where we can work with our different student groups involved in the program so that we can go after bigger sponsors and spread that money out across all the events. Online events and partnering with other SAAs at Alberta institutions. I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up online events when talking about programming these days. I think the world is changing and people are going to be expecting online events taking place or some sort of online engagement with whatever event they are, I think, for the rest of time. I mean, that could look simple as something I was thinking about, like how sport franchises do it, or they used to do it, where there's like a blackout period. So if all the tickets aren't sold to a show we're having in the theater, we're not going to be streaming that online. But the second that we sell out, we're now streaming that online so that it can go to all students or any student who is not able to get a ticket. And especially for some of those bigger acts, that would be, I think that'd be a great opportunity. And then partnering with the other SAs in Alberta, we've had a few successes this year with both the kickoff concert and Angela Davis speaker event to the B in September, where we worked with the different student associations across the province. And whether that be something as simple as, you know, it's a lot cheaper for if Calgary books a speaker on Thursday and then we have the speaker on Friday, it's a lot cheaper for them to fly to Alberta and then be doing multiple shows that it would be if we're just trying to do a one-off. I think it, also with like SAs in Edmonton, there's tons of opportunity for us to expand that expand these ticketed events past just the U of A. We very easily could run two or three shows if tickets are open to all different student associations in the city. And then finally, connecting with other campuses and U Alberta venues. This really comes from like, we want this to be more than just about the theater. Like for example, I've never seen a show in Conn Hall, but I would love to. There's no reason why we can't like kind of take our show on the road, for lack of a better term, to other venues. Working with Augustana, who also has the Peter Lougheed Center, which is a theater which operates very similar to ours. And again, like that block booking experience, we do a show in the Horowitz on Thursday, then we do a show at Augustana on Friday, something like that. So yeah, that's kind of the details that we've gotten into, and those are really going to be like those are going to be kind of the critical success factors for how we move forward with our programming. So we have done like some initial brainstorming. We've worked with kind of some of our student staff, and we've worked with just anyone who has kind of talked to about this presentation so far. But like here's just like a wide range of topics or things that we could do. Some of this stuff has historically been done at the Students' Union. Some of it is currently done. Some of it might not have been done in years, and some of it might never have been done. I mean, some things that like stand out to me is like a fashion show or a musical. The SU did a musical 4, 5, 6 years ago. So opportunities like that. And I mean, I know we have events kind of like Petra Kucha or TEDx that happen all over campus. And that gets back to my original point of having that in the theater where we have like a proper, where we have like the entrance way, and then we have the lobby where people can socialize afterwards and before. It's just going to create a very different experience, and it's in a classroom, and I think an experience that would be far superior. Some other things that came up today, like esports viewings. I mean, we've been trying to figure out a way to like break into esports for a few years now, but those are like very popular events that happen elsewhere in the city that would bring a totally different user base to come out to the show. So yeah, I'll leave that up for a few more seconds just so folks can go through it, but I will also be sending this out, I think, with Mark's presentation. Okay. So my last thing is just like, we really want like collaboration is going to be the key to success on this. I look at it as like, we can provide frameworks for student groups and other students to really like create an event experience that they wouldn't be able to elsewhere. If we have a theater that's modern, modern, high spec, they'll have an opportunity to work in a space that they really wouldn't get elsewhere for hopefully and hopefully for a lot cheaper, but also something that they will never be able to do elsewhere where they go, which will be a great experience and really add to their university experience when they're here. But yeah, that's all for me. I know Mark is and Alana both have are very passionate about this as well. If they have any comments or any questions, I don't know if this is the right time to ask that.
Yeah, I think it's great. This is a great opportunity to ask if anybody has any questions. So we open it up, and Jared, please let us know if anybody does have any questions. I think it's important. You know, one of the ways that we view the building as a whole, we view the building as a canvas on which students paint the picture of student life, of student community, and that's very much how we view the theater as well. We're trying to create a platform onto which students can build their own vision of what campus life and programming should be. So we're very excited about that. I got a couple more comments on that, but let's take some questions first, if anybody has any. I think...
Mark, the question just popped up in the chat here from Councillor Horvald.
Hey guys, thank you so far for the presentation. I just got a quick question for you. This is for Brennan specifically. You were talking about the turnaround factor, and that seems like one of the issues that we're facing right now. In your, I guess because you're a lot more of an expert on this, what exactly do you see upgrading the theater from an old to a new model? How much bigger of a draw is that to bringing people in? Is that something that's going to kind of pop the ceiling off of where we're stuck in right now, and by modernizing it opens up the floor to a lot more people wanting to actively come here? Or is that something that's based on being Alberta or Edmonton specifically, or are we being limited right now by the current theater that we have set up, other than the turnaround, but by being able to pull people by what we're presenting as a place?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. Hopefully I hit all your points, but I think we're definitely limited currently on what we can do in the space. And we've also been, I think, on a bit of a decline on the last 10 years. We used to be, when I first started here, it was near impossible to find a date in the theater. But as other spaces have come online, realistically, the problem, one of the issues we run into is there's just a lot of setup time and there's a lot of takedown time in our current theater. And that's just because we try to meet the needs of every single show. We want to be able to do anything we can in the theater. But with that comes added complexity of, like, I mean, the Students Union has always stretched the dollar as far as they can. If we want to be able to meet all those needs, it's going to take us longer to set up and take down. And that equals a higher cost for the client, because we need to bring in staff to do that. And so most of our clients, and same thing with the student groups, they end up paying for that staff time. So that's the biggest factor. We should right now, even to do like a talking head lecture, just like one person with a podium on stage, there's at least 2 to 3 hours of staff time for people to set that up. With the plans that we currently have, what I've seen, it honestly should be like a roll out the podium and turn it on and you're good to go. So that's going to be a huge financial burden off any sort of client, and also off the Students Union when we want to run our own programs. I was looking at kind of the reviews of the space. I think it was like Yelp or Google something a few days ago. And people were commenting on the theater how it's like, it still looks like a great space, but it's very obviously old. The seats are uncomfortable. It has kind of an older feeling to it. And all of these things will affect the ability to book the space. We recently, within the last 2 years, we've had a few conferences, like very large conferences, who wanted to use our space, including some from the university. And they everything was good. They loved the space. They loved working with their staff. When it came down to it, I mean, I remember specifically with one client just being like, they sat down in a seat and then they were like, oh no, we can't come here. These are way too uncomfortable. People will be very angry. So we lost it at the end of like a four hour theater tour for them.
And I think it's also a matter of, I mean, it's simple, Counselor Orwold. I mean, things get cheaper and more efficient. I mean, new technology allows you to do things faster. It's just the way it is. I mean, we're dealing with literally 50-year-old technology in a lot of cases in the theater. So that is an issue. I remember during the SEI referendum, they were doing the debate forum, and there started to be all these problems with the sound during it because our system's so old that it wasn't very well set up. And people were like, you guys did this on purpose, right? But no, we didn't. The facility's just old, and that greatly impacts both our desirability as a place to go to spend your night out if you're a patron, and it affects our ability to attract the best performers, the best speakers, the best whatever, because it's just not current. And again, as Brennan said, it comes down to this core source of that problem is the problem that SCF is designed to address. One of the two key problems SCF is designed to address, which is the fact that the SU has not traditionally maintained its capital assets appropriately. We're trying to fix that with this. So, Councillor Pollock, or is that a
gateway? Oh, it's a gateway, so yeah. Mitchell.
Hey, thank you everyone for your presentation so far. I know there's been some discussions around the financial considerations of like holding events at the theater. I was just wondering, what is the plan to get student groups to hold their events in the theater when there are other spaces on campus that are more affordable or even free to students?
So I'd answer that in two ways. First, for certain kinds of events, while it probably won't be, we are going to be working on new models to make that work that greatly reduce or eliminate risk for student groups getting involved, such as it is conceivable if a group wants to bring in a speaker but doesn't want to commit to the rent, maybe we can find a way where we get them to help us book it and promote it, but we take care of the costs. That's one of the things that Brennan and I are going to spend a lot of time over the next year sorting out. But we've had some initial conversations, and I'm very positive we can keep it fairly competitive financially. More than that, though, I think that it comes to like where people want to go. I mean, it is different when you go to a theater that has a space out front where you can mix and mingle before or after the show. It's different when you're in a proper theater that is designed with acoustics, sight lines, lighting in mind, where the seats are a hell of a lot more comfortable than a lecture seat, because right now they're not, we know that, but the new ones, they're going to be much more comfortable and supported by a professional tech staff. So we're pretty optimistic. We're not trying to solve every problem of every group. We do want to have events that are going to have a good draw. So we think we have a lot of opportunities in that space. Brennan, do you want to add anything to that answer?
No, I mean, I think you covered it, but I guess I would just say, like, I could easily foresee us being able to do, through like partnerships and working with student groups, us being able to do events which are like free to the partnering organizations, and also using sponsorship as well as part of that. I mean, the Students' Union already has a pretty good grant, student group granting process. So like working all, kind of like pulling all these levers to make those events work. And it depends on too, if the event is going to be big enough that enough people come out. I mean, maybe they charge tickets through bar sales or merchandise sales, sponsorship. There's a lot of like different inputs that we can play with so that we can hopefully have a have there be zero financial burden on the sponsoring organization. Yeah, and I mean, I think, again, like, some of the issues that we face are, too, just the or currently face are, like, the amount of, or the amount of, like, upstart it takes to run an event. If we have a space that's, like, easier for student groups to just come into and do their event, it'll be more successful. One of the other things that we saw with student groups events in the past, too, is there's a lot of, like, they want to do it, or they can only really be able to do their events in March or April, which is getting very near to the end of the school year. And then there's a lot of groups that want to do that. I'm hopeful that we can, over the next year, really work to set up a framework so that we can better support student groups that happening at any time of the year, deal with a lot of the things that hold the student groups up. And I mean, this is where we get into consulting with students. Like, what are the biggest factors that are stopping you from running an event, a big successful event in September, October, November? Then we figure out a way to mitigate those so that they can be successful at the end of it.
Brennan, can I ask you a question? This is a, so in that late March, April, May period, we make a ton of money on the theater by bringing in all these kids to dance, but that's typically a daytime activity. Is what you're saying, is part of an offshoot of what you're saying, is that we could theoretically open up some of those nights because we could turn around the theater faster?
Yeah, I mean, like, this is getting a little in the weeds, but honestly, the biggest technical challenge we face in the theater is we have like 120 light fixtures, where really we need 160. That means that we have to move all these light fixtures around to be able to hit light the points of the stage that we need for every single event. And that, it takes a lot of time, because not only do you have to like actually physically move the light, you also have to like program the support systems to now know where the light's in a different location. If we have all that, that really gets us to this point of just being able to walk in, turn the, warm the systems up and be ready to go for the event. I won't, like, some of the dance definitely goes into the evening, but there's opportunities there for sure, to be able to fit in multiple events.
Thanks, Brennan. Councillor Bowes.
Thank you for the presentation, Brennan. I was just wondering that, and please do correct me if my information is wrong, there are currently at least two theaters on campus. So I was wondering, why do we need to keep this third theater? And everything you just mentioned, why can't those things be done in those theaters? I'm talking about the one in Tim's and the Convocation Hall. Thank you.
For sure. And I mean, I don't fully know the operating model of either of those other spaces. Convocation Hall, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, does not traditionally operate as a bookable theater space. The university definitely holds events there. And there is, I know, honestly, the only event I've ever been there, a friend had a wedding. But their support systems are not set up to be holding live events very regularly. With the Tim Center, is very integrated into the fine arts programs. So the availability in that space is nearly non-existent, especially during the school year when school is in, because it is regularly used by fine arts. I'd also say both those spaces are significantly smaller than the theater. And this, like, again, I'm not entirely sure. The Tim Center is somewhere in the ballpark of 200 to 400 seats. And I'm not sure what Convocation Hall is, but so that they don't have as many opportunities for large scale programming.
I would just add, that's a legitimate, that's a good question, Amon. We have considered that. We have looked at the market position, not only within campus, but within the city at large in terms of the theater. The simple fact of the matter is, the size of your theater and the layout of your theater and the technical configuration of your theater has a great impact on what you can do in that theater. Convocation Hall has a lot of has a lot of benefits, but it can, but it is not a truly multi-purpose space to the same, in the same way that our theater is. That's point one. And it is smaller. The Tim Center, I do know, I mean, the thing with the Tim Center, A, it's a lot smaller. It's 200 seats. And it is not really a publicly accessible theater. It can occasionally be booked, but their focus is academics. The difference with this theater is it's run by students. It's run by you guys. So we redo the theater. You can have skit night here. You can have med show here. You can have the mixed chorus presenting a Christmas concert here. Now, the mixed chorus could do Convocation Hall for sure. I think they prefer to do a new theater because they used to do it with us all the time, and we can put more seats in the auditorium. But those other events can't happen there. The theater is I'm a big believer. Now we can disagree on this. We have for years online. We've totally disagreed on this, but I do believe in the vision of the building. I think it was very visionary, and I think that the theater is the last vestige and the most important vestige of that original vision of Sub. Sub has evolved as it has needed to, but to be honest, at the cost of campus community. And one of the things that since I started 10 or 12 years ago is I wanted to rebuild that sense of campus community on campus that was there when I was a student. And we're doing this in the face of headwinds, where Brennan was talking about this earlier. The culture has changed and people's behavior has changed. And I do not think, this is my personal opinion, that has necessarily been a positive thing for campus culture. And I think that the Students' Union and the theater has a key part of that, can play a key role in helping to rebuild and strengthen campus community and culture. But we need to do something with this space for that to happen. And we're going to disagree on this, Amelin, I know. I'm just giving you the pitch. Councillor Carbajal?
My question was answered. So.
Okay. Councillor Oliveira?
My question was also answered. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. And thanks, Brennan. I'm going to just wrap this up, this part of this presentation up quickly. Hopefully, I'll have less problems with my tech. I used to be a tech guy, so it's embarrassing to me that I'm having all these problems. Then I'm going to introduce you to the team. I'm going to talk a bit about our architect. We're going to take a little break because everyone needs to go to the washroom. We're getting close to that time, if that's okay with you, Jared, because you're the boss here. And then we'll come back.
We'll be like, Mark, you're starting to step on toes here, buddy.
I know. I'm sorry. But we know that Steven's going to run long.
Yeah, so if we're going into another presentation here afterwards, we could probably look. I mean, we're sitting at 7:05. If we want to take a 10-minute recess and come back.
Okay. Not quite yet, though. I got a little bit more. All right. I got to whet everybody's appetite.
I figured you might.
Okay. All right. So let's try this again, and let's see if I can not screw this up this time. Okay. All right. So Brennan gave you his presentation here. I want to talk a little bit about what we see as being really central to this, and that is partnerships with student groups. So some of our key goals here are going to be to keep the costs as low as possible for student groups. We're going to be doing a lot of work to develop new partnership models, revenue sharing rather than rentals, for example. Trying to get it so that the theater is a service to student groups on campus, and that it provide that the theater also acts as what was talked about in those planning documents, has a living laboratory for students to learn not only from what they see but from what they produce, and we want to give those kind of performance opportunities to students. So that is the overview. The theater is about community, and it's about the growth of our members. I'm going to talk a little bit. I'm going to talk very, very briefly because we're going to go to a design discussion in a little bit. And I want to point out some things you should be keeping in mind or that you may see reflected in some of the design things. I'll come back to it after the presentation, but the thing about sustainability and capital fee is that it really does mean a lot to us. Sustainability is actually central to everything that we do, because we want to be a model for how things can be done right. So first thing, environmental sustainability. So what kinds of things are we going to do in this area? We're going to reduce energy use considerably. I'll explain how afterwards. And we're going to generate power. We're going to reduce water use substantially. We're going to reduce waste through all of this. And so in terms of social sustainability, we're going to greatly improve accessibility for mobility challenged students. We're going to improve accessibility for people with hearing disabilities. We're going to, the theater program is central to our vision of building a better community. We want to do more and more diverse events and build our community that way. And we think also that having a place like this that always has something going on, or often almost always has something going on that you can go and take a break with, is going to promote student mental health and wellness. It's going to promote the growth of students, as was originally envisioned by the people who thought of, who conceived of a vision for SUP. Finally, economic sustainability. So we think we can lower the per event operating costs and increase usage. So that's going to increase. And we think we can get, we think there are, aside from the student program piece, we think there are revenue opportunities to increase the financial performance of the theater. And we can use that money to support our services. I'll talk about that a little bit later too. And finally, this does resolve the outstanding deferred maintenance on the theater. As we outlined earlier with council earlier this year, we have to think, whether it's this year or in 5 years or probably 10 at the most, what do we do with that space? And repurposing it, as we've seen, will probably be more expensive than just renovating, even though we're doing an expansion, than renovating it. So we think that there's a lot to do with that. So we'll come back to that again, and you can hammer me on that later, and I'll tell you what I do know and what I don't know so far. So let's talk about the design. Now I'm gonna take a break before we start the bulk of this, but I wanted to do a couple things first before we get started. So first, who's our team? Our design team, our primary consultant is an architecture firm called Arc Studios. The principal is Stephen Boyd, who's supported by Shay Gibson, who's also here tonight with us, and the rest of the Arc of his staff. They're great. They've been doing a fantastic job. We have a number of supporting consultants who've been helping us refine our project so that we can be more sure about the costing and the functionality of the space. Most of these, the electrical, mechanical, and structural, they all have a lot of U of A alumni working with them, so they're all very excited to be on the project. For electrical, we have SMP Engineering. They're also going to handle our PV stuff. For mechanical, we have SEMA Plus. For structural, Diane Chernenko at Chernenko Engineering. She's a U of A alumni, has an office just off White Avenue. The university uses her a lot, and what she's famous for is finding solutions for structural problems that are very, very cost effective and very creative. She's actually got a really strong rep for being a very creative engineer, very effective. And then we have a company called RWDI who's helping us with the theater design and with acoustical design of the theater. For project management, we have Russell Steffes. Russell Steffes basically keeps ARC and our consultants on track, and he coordinates with us. Russell has worked on every major Students Union building renovation project since 1992. He knows the building exceptionally well. We have never gone significantly, we may have been fought a couple percent over here and there in the odd project, but we've never had a major budget miss. We did once have a bad timeline miss, but generally Russell has a tried and true track record working with the university, delivering these projects on time, at or under budget, and he knows the building intimately. So we're very, and he's a great guy. We just love working with Russell. And then for the student union side, Alana, myself, our building manager, Marguerite Tavor-Rest, and Brett, who's our longest serving employee, if anybody knows her, who's been involved in the SU for a while, knows Marguerite. She's been here since she was a student, much like me, except that she's a few years older than me. And then there's Brennan Murphy, who's our director of conferencing and events, as I said earlier, and Aaron Van Horn, our building planner. So those are, that's the, we were also supported in that by Kristen Stoy, who comes to all of our meetings and tells us what she thinks. So before we pass it over, to take a break. And after the break, ARC's going to come back and go over the design for you. I wanted to introduce you a little bit more to Stephen. So what's interesting is you guys have all seen Stephen's work. He designed the atrium. He's done a couple projects on campus, the atrium. ARC has also just completed the cab renovation in the last year or so. So you've seen his work there. He does a bunch of work outside of the university, of course. They're working on a big project up in a major redevelopment project in St. Albert. The Rural Glenora renovation was one of Stephen's designs. He was central to the redesign of the Edmonton Expo Center. And the other examples here, one is a concept for a concept design for another project that they're working on, are pursuing. And there's a chapel at the hospital, at the University Hospital, I think, or one of the hospitals in Edmonton that they also designed. So that's all great. There's a whole bunch of stuff in his portfolio. I just picked a few that you guys may be, a couple of them anyways, you'd be familiar with. But really, there is one project of Stephen's that you all know about, and that's the airport. Stephen designed the new EIA. So we feel very fortunate to have an architect of Stephen's caliber on board. We've worked with him for a few years now, and we just find it to be a great experience. So we're going to take a break, if that's all right, Mr. Speaker. A 10-minute break now, you said?
Yeah, let's just take a 10-minute break just quick here, and we can hop back at 7:25.
Okay.
Alrighty, seeing as how it's 7:25, we'll probably just look to resume things here. Mark, did you want to just dive right back into it?
Sure, happy to.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to pass it off to...
So, yeah. Point of information, sorry, Mark, sorry to interject. I was wondering, Mr. Speaker, could you take the attendance since we are almost at the halfway point for meeting?
Yeah, actually, sure, let's do that here first quickly. Okay. We'll start up at the front here. President Agarwal?
President.
Vice President Draper was not here. Vice President Lay?
He had to step out, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. Vice President Cron?
Here.
Vice President Kidd?
Present.
Governor Conrad?
I'm here.
Councillor Carbajal. Just 1 second, I'm just going to pull up the chat. Oh, perfect. Councillor Dixon.
She had to step out.
Okay. Councillor DeGrano.
Here.
Councillor Marquise. Councillor Marquise? Councillor Oliveira? Councillor Oliveira, are you still here? Councillor Veloso?
Here.
Councillor Yabut?
Here.
Councillor Berhani?
Here.
Councillor Suretsky? Councillor Matoska?
Present.
Councillor Ackerman? Councillor Baticki?
Here.
Councillor Bid? Councillor Bid? Councillor Bose?
Here.
Councillor Hariharan? Councillor Montero?
Present.
Councillor Buchanan?
Present.
Councillor Filipovich? Councillor Orvald?
Still alive.
Councillor Brandwine?
Here.
Councillor Enerson?
Present.
Councillor Badesha?
Here.
Councillor Berezesh? Councillor Dillon? Councillor Dillon, are you here? Councillor Fotang? Councillor Kamani?
Here.
Councillor Corday? I myself am here. Mark is also here. Okay, we're good. Mark, back to you.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to pass it over to Stephen in a second. So Brennan and Stephen get ready to take the handoff. What I want to mention first, though, is that whenever you start a design, project, you often have something. Oops. Let me go to this. We call a design brief. this isn't the exact brief we used with Stephen. Stephen had worked on the original, the last version of this project. So he has a pretty good idea about what our design ideas are. But I really did find this design brief for the 1964 planning documents really good. The theater should itself hold as much interest as a sculptural entity has its programs hold. Maximum creativity and ingenuity is required to find a solution to the design to the needs outlined below that will be more economical and more flexible than traditional theaters managed to be. There's no question that Stevens brought a certain sculptural and to the architecture of the space that he's going to show you. And I got to say that I've been really impressed with the whole team in terms of how they've really really worked to be as innovative, creative in making decisions that keep this theater as effective as humanly possible, but also reasonably economical as well. So I'm going to pass it off to Stephen Boyd for the principal of ARC Studio.
Hello, everyone.
And someone has to stop sharing because I don't know how on my screen.
Yeah, I think, do we have control?
Hang on, let me try this. You should be able to. There we go.
Okay. I will walk you through this and I will try not to talk like I normally would at length. So also I'm not used to doing this virtually like this. So usually I'm waving my hands and pointing to things. So you have to excuse some of that. Essentially when we started looking at this building, well, these are going very fast. Is that what we're doing? Oh, it's on a video. Okay. Sorry all. When we started looking at this building, I have a bit of affinity for the building myself for two reasons. One is I, like Mark, have a birth year celebrating the same time as this building was built. So there's a there's one side of the equation. The other part is the fact that this building is a very strong example of mid-century modern architecture, which as an architect and an affinity for design, I really appreciate the original building and the lines that it has. It is quite a significant piece. It may not seem like it, and to some it just looks like an old building, but the idea of this building and what it means in history is something worth celebrating and keeping as pure as possible. When I say that, although there's some examples of my work that you've seen that Mark very generously shared, I guess, with you all, there's a very diverse portfolio there because there's different reason you do different things. This building doesn't, in my opinion, warrant a big, strong statement. It doesn't need that. It in itself is a strong statement. And probably some of the key things about that would be the way the tower sits on top of the podium and then the podium itself. That large precast band as it wraps around the building is one of the sort of fundamental design features of the building. And off of that is that pilote or colonnade element that wraps around the base. So there was some things about that that, in my opinion, we want to keep pure. There's been a number of additions, renovations, and changes to the building. That's a normal life evolution of a building. But through the exploration of this design, we wanted to make sure that we were keeping it, I guess, as pure to the original form as possible, yet still making a new statement and actually bringing it along into the into the new millennium, I guess, as it is. So if we go forward, I'll walk you through a bit of the design. Well, here you can see in the original impact, the way the building sat on top of the colonnade, which is a strong element, with the theater sitting above it and the tower box sitting above it. It's quite the composition on that large, I guess, main sort of podium element as we talk about. So if we go on, this element here that I was working on and I designed back, I guess, in 2015, how it was finished, this was a bit of an expression, again, to that same effect. The idea was not to overpower the building. It was not to put an addition on the building that became all about the addition. It was meant to celebrate the original architecture. So that podium band ran through. We did not want to touch the original artwork, did not want to mess with the theater. It was really to actually accentuate this new interconnected space, obviously. So I'm not trying to sell you on this original design, but the intent here, as you can imagine, the lines are fairly simple, clean, square, sort of working back to the original form of the building and building off of that horizontality or that horizontal plane. As we go forward and we look on now what is the northeast corner of the building and its expression towards the quad. This is actually going to be a really, I think, strong and striking, you know, opportunity here in a very subtle and less in your face kind of way. We know with the expansion of quad and the administration building coming down the long-term plan, this entire, you know, east face of sub is going to be facing towards quad, which is going to make it that much more visible. And I think the opportunity that we started looking at and what these gestures here suggest is the idea of taking that facade on the north end of the building and pulling it out a full grid bay, which you see in the second graphic there. The idea for that is actually it starts to express the theater entry itself. Today, the theater entrance is one that is shared with the sub entrance from that northeast corner. That's one of the main entrances into the building. There's a flood of people. So it's kind of an anti-climactic sort of entrance sequence to get to the theater, which is sort of downplaying the nature of what a theater can be about arrival and the sequence of the theater. So the notion of pulling that facade forward does a couple things. The biggest thing is it actually pulls it apart. It extends the lobby on the second floor, which is a big part of the programming necessity. And that's, it really goes to the functionality of the theater and the overall sort of bringing it up to current code. The other thing it does is it creates its own entrance for the theater itself. It allows the main door to still occur for the Student Union building, but then that point where it becomes in and it creates a new theater entrance. The idea of the plane of glass that wraps down, this is sort of a new intervention into the original form of the building. The idea on this is that it sort of celebrates the more traditional aspect of a theater in that red carpet approach or walkway. This actually opens it up and it inverts the idea of the red carpet. So it sort of celebrates the theater entrance without changing the entire aspect of the building. If we go forward, other key elements to the gestures that we're trying to do with the exterior is we want to reinforce the colonnade. It was an odd thing. I wouldn't typically criticize this building, but I think the original entrance and the stair location was one that was very odd to me. And at one point I thought it might have actually been a renovation at some point. It wasn't. It was in the original building, but it did a very strange thing is it broke the original colonnade as you walk around the building undercover. The idea of that was something that was, I think, very strong to the original design concept. What this renovation or addition actually contemplates is deleting that and opening up, reinforcing that colonnade as it wraps around the entire east side from the quad. Also, what you notice is there's the sort of famed poster wall that everybody knows for generations. Any student that's been on campus knows that wall, that posting wall that's facing towards quad or will be. We don't want it to completely disappear that or get that rid of that. The idea that we're having is that we want to pull that into the building and then actually open up. And you'll see this on the plans in a little bit here, how we can open up a bigger portion of the building towards the newly expanded quad in the future. It makes it much more inviting. And it actually brings that element into the building, which actually starts to bring more students into the building. The final thing, as you see in this, is that relocation of that stair. Again, that's the stair and the location where it is how you generally the main entrance to the theater. The idea of bringing it around at the other end of the red carpet, if you will, and it helps to define the new entrance. So we slide it around the corner on the north side and it comes off the courtyard. We go forward. Straight elevations, you see we're trying to keep it very true to the original form of the building. We haven't gone and done any bizarre or unique changes to the building. The biggest thing we're doing here is, as I said, open up the colonnade. You can see that red fritted glass is the idea of announcing the theater entrance. To the left of that is the sub entrance still. The upper fly tower portion of the theater, the intent there is to wrap that with photovoltaic cells. And those would run on all four facades and possibly even the roof to increase the maximum area for a solar generation that would offset some of the usage of the theater. And then we want to keep a lot of the materiality the same with the board form concrete, for all the columns at the lower end, the colonnade. We're going to replicate that and continue that language. And we want to reuse, which is also a very sustainable approach, is reuse some of that exposed aggregate concrete precast on the side of the building. So you see it here, we're going to remove it, rebuild it. And if we go to the next elevation, you see we're actually replacing that on the facade as we pull it forward. So the new facade will be clad with the old material. So it takes on that same aesthetic and overall look of the original building. Probably the biggest change is we have to redo the stair in that corner. It gets larger and pulls out a bit more into the north courtyard, not in a significant way, but the idea is to downplay the stairwell and play up the entrance to the theater. And then the windows on the second floor move forward, and that's all into the brand new expanded lobby of the theater. So here's an image of what I mean on the outside. So this is the original facade. It is getting a little bit weathered, but yet not actually, it's still standing the test of time. It's not failing. It's not cracked. It's just dirty. As we go forward and start to see what it means, this is the idea of pulling it forward now. So you actually see that red glass is not an in your face. It's not meant to be seen from across campus, but it's definitely one to announce the theater. And it does create something unique for the Horowitz itself. There's an opportunity for signage there. Student Union has an opportunity to sign the building still back up at the top. Again, now this way it would become a presence out towards the expanded quad as it extends to the south. And then you see how the colonnade would actually wrap around unimpeded as you walk around and into the theater entrance. The main sub doors remain where they are today. And then there's an opportunity to open up, and you'll see in the planning, but to the left of the entrance, there's an opportunity to expand your sitting area and your gathering space inside. So visually it connects to the interior of the building in a much, much more meaningful way from the quad circulation. So we keep going here, you sort of see a view straight on. So you see the main doors to the left, the stairwell's removed. So now you're seeing into the building, and I'll show you how that planning can work with the redevelopment of the washrooms on the main floor, a very minor sort of scope, if you will, of renovation on the main floor, but it'll have a big impact to the university proper and the entranceway. And then there's the doors to the theaters. You wrap in and you see the glass as it wraps underneath, and it announces the entrance to the theater in a much more grand and sort of celebratory way. Here you kind of get a sense of, as you're coming around from the south, walking up, what you're missing from the photo is obviously that posting board wall, which would have been right in front of us here. It gets inset, and with some clear glass, we look through and there's a bit of a lounge space, washrooms on the other side, but that posting board wall will be focused through the glass. So you will still see it, and actually makes it even more accessible for more students. From the courtyard, as you're walking around from the engineering side of campus, you walk through, that stairwell is replaced as you see here. And I'll explain a little bit why, but it's gotten much larger than it currently is. Not so much in the footprint, it's just pulled out, but it's really in response to the code requirement for the theater itself, which has been, I guess, historically fairly low as far as the code response goes. It would not meet current code today. And part of this is to bring the theater up to code. Here, this is a segmented piece of the lower level plan, so it's a little bit hard to understand, but the goal in the basement there is, it's really all we're doing in the lower level is modifying the stairwell, and there's a new elevator being introduced. It'll tie all four levels of the building together. So a second elevator for barrier-free access, as well as just, you know, student movement from the main floor all the way up to the upper level of the theater. On the main floor, which you see in the image to the right, that's just a segment of the plan. If you can imagine, north is straight up the courtyard. Existing doors remain where they are. That's the vestibule people know, and quad is to the right there, right off of that. So you can see how the colonnade wraps around in plan and comes to the new theater entrance, which is here with the new staircase. This is a relocated staircase, the one that's in the front, which is actually a piece of the original history of the building. The goal here is to reuse that stair, refurbish it and put it back in, so it maintains the connection to the other stairs in the building. Behind that is the new exit stair, as you see, is a larger block, as I mentioned, sitting aside from it. That stairwell actually is going to house two stairs in one. It's called the scissor stair, so they interlock. Some people are familiar with those in some large tower buildings. There's an efficiency in doing that. It keeps things simple. And it actually gets the exiting capacity that's required for the theater in a much more compact footprint. So it keeps the cost down. And then the new elevator exists right in that point there. That elevator is actually meant to be a front and back entrance to the theater, so you can walk through. Reason being is, there's times when there's going to be an event. It's possible to secure the theater entrance from the main Student Union building with a sliding glass or separation partition at the bottom of the stairs. We just have something sliding there. And then that elevator, when that theater is closed, that might be also securing the theater lobby, much as it is today. There'll be times when the theater is closed. That elevator then from the other side will be accessible 24/7. When the student union building's open, that elevator will be accessible to students to move up and down. Adjacent to that, the old washroom block, as you walk through the doors, is just on the side there. This project is contemplating the redevelopment of those washrooms. What you see here in plan is the redevelopment of those washrooms. And what we're looking at here right now is the individual user unisex washrooms or non-gender specific washrooms. We've got a barrier-free stall, and this actually brings our count in the building up with these individual stalls, which actually improves the existing facilities, which are getting very old at that end of the building, and actually creates a better set of washrooms on the main floor for students either from the quad or coming from the food court. Behind that is the big win. That's where the glass will open up. Right now, that stairwell sits in front of that. What you'll see there is now with that clear glass, we open that up. And the goal here is to ultimately create a bit of a lounge space there that would actually extend some of the seating possibility from the food court area and eventually maybe looking at things like your coffee station there and the ability for it to have some additional seating up by the glass off of quad. So it actually introduces that function to quad and out to the rest of campus. The posting board would be set on the backside wall there of the washrooms. So again, you can see it through the glass. That's how it sits in the plan. If we go upstairs, same orientation. The auditorium floor is the main floor of the theater. There's a lot going on with that. But the arrival sequence is you come up the existing stair relocated. You get to the top of that stair. The elevator would also be exiting out that side for a theater event. Or again, it would have a door out the west side for student use when the theater is not in use or not open. It'll have a double duty for that intent. The exit stair exists to the north, so we have two exit stairs within that shaft, as I said, the one side coming from mainly from the theater, and then the other side exiting the upper floor of the building. Both would be used when the theater's at full capacity, so there's two exits in one. The main lobby, you can see the expansion, that one grid line right there is the existing grid line. From that point north, that's the expanded lobby area, which actually increases your lobby by a significant amount. We have new improved sort of glazing out towards the courtyard. The new glazing, the existing glazing is still in place, but it's also 50 years old. So on a sustainability side, that envelope will be replaced with a much more higher performing envelope and glazing system. So it'll reduce the overall energy efficiency of the lobby space itself. And then the theater expansion actually allows an ability to actually have pre and post events from the theater in the lobby as a celebratory area or a gathering space, but it'll also have an opportunity for events to be held in the theater lobby itself now. It's much larger. And the capacity's there. We've improved the washrooms for the theater. We've split the bank of washrooms. So on that side, on the west side, of the lobby space is the men's washroom, accessible from the lobby. And on the east side is the women's washroom, accessible from the lobby. So on the main auditorium floor, the choice was to still split men's and women's washrooms, but the count has actually increased overall, and it's more in line. Now this brings it up to current code, and there's an appropriate number of fixtures for the theater itself. Access to the back of house on this side here is coming for, there's a lot of use, especially with some users where they're using the Dinwiddie Lounge for space with the dancers and all. So we've actually created a vestibule lock there and improved access into the theater back of house. And then the renovation will include the redevelopment of the change rooms, bringing the one furthest south there to a barrier-free accessible change room and washroom, improving that and bringing it up to current code. And then when we go off the lobby on the other side, past the women's washroom, big thing here is we're creating the lobby expansion down the east side. That's a new barrier-free ramp. So this increases and improves accessibility to the theater, where it allows a barrier-free access to the mid-level of the theater, providing additional seating for barrier-free and accessibility access. to that mid-level and actually the stage, because it will allow people to come in at that level through the light lock and out onto the stage, sorry, up there through the light lock and then onto the stage at that point, which currently it is a difficult access route for people of limited mobility. The exit stair, we've had to expand the exit stair here as well. Currently, there's an exit stair here that only goes down from this floor to the main floor and out. The theater and new code requires that we take that stairwell up. So we're expanding that stairwell that goes up to the upper level of the auditorium. So the balcony level seating, which again is in response to code requirement. And then back of house area, the green room, and the access to the green room and back of stage from that side also is a stage. The performer's entrance would also be coming up from that theater, or sorry, that stairwell, and into the back of house directly. So we've actually improved the access for the back of house. The goal inside the theater chamber itself, we've improved the seating, larger seats, and we've not significantly dropped the seating count. We're still hovering just around that 700 seat mark, which is a great place to be. And all the seats now are at a minimum 20 inch width, which is compared to their smaller seats in the theater today. There's a variety or range of them. These are all new seats. Aisleways work, and we have exiting all working now well. And we've got an improved back of house area for sound booth access off the main theater from the front of house. And if we go over to the upper level, the idea here is we've expanded the upper level from the original form of the fly tower, which actually goes out to the edge of the stairs right now. That's sort of the footprint there on the north side, and it currently wraps down the side on the east along that grid line to the front. We have not moved the south wall, and then it wraps up on the west side along that grid line. So we've expanded the footprint on the upper floor for a couple of reasons. The idea here is we've actually taken the wall and moved it north. The current exiting, as we said, does not conform to code. This now has an upper level lobby with an interconnection to the main floor lobby. We've expanded that with an open to below off the stairs. You'll see how that interconnects the space. The theater is also connected now with the theater elevator, which would come straight up to the theater level. And then the exiting and the stair would work out that way and come and taking you back down into that main theater exit. Washrooms have been improved and added on the upper floor. These were back to gender neutral washrooms on the upper floor, a barrier free stall, and six other just gender neutral stalls. So it improves the overall accessibility as well as the access for a number of people on the upper level. Back of house would start at that point, and then this is where we've expanded, where there's now some proper staff amenity areas. There's a lunchroom change area for that, some additional storage areas, and just a couple workspaces up top. The back of house on the other side, the expanded area there, in addition to increasing the lobby, upper level lobby, there's an opportunity there for a potential VIP or mother's room. And then the additional storage on that side, which is of great demand. We've increased the upper level seating bowl as well, somewhat. And you can see on the flank, on the sides, is where we've actually added some additional seating on the sides overlooking the stage. If we move forward, you kind of see there's an interior architectural gesture here as we've actually gone and explored the idea of how that interior space works with the upper level ribbon, which you kind of see behind me. That upper precast band is sort of old and heavy and very dated. So we kind of thought we'd make a new gesture with that interior, basically creating this enveloping kind of wrap. The notion here is taking this ribbon-like gesture, which actually comes from the one stage right side, wraps around, sort of redefines that entrance wall as it wraps around the side chamber and flies out through the back and kind of comes back around the other side. The ribbon sort of splits at that lower level and comes up, and it forms part of the upper balcony as well. So
we do just have a question here.
Sure.
Beth, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. So this is for the last slide. I was just waiting to make sure you didn't cover it before I asked. Mm-hmm. But there is, yeah, like a ton of code updates for accessibility. I was just wondering what if there are any changes to seating availability for people with mobility issues. I know there's like a lot of stairs for the seating in the theater. So yeah, just wondering about that.
Yeah, this is all brought up to the newest level of code, the Alberta Building Code. We've actually improved accessibility seating. So that was the big thing that we did. There's always the back area seating as you came through at the top. And then with that new ramp, the ability is to bring people down to the middle level. And there's options for seating right in the center of house for people of limited mobility, which there was not available before. And then their upper level balcony, there's back row seating at that point. Only because of the existing stairs, we're not able to get them down lower on the upper balcony. But this does meet the newest code and the expectation. Does that answer your question?
Texted, but yeah, thank you. That's really helpful.
Okay. All right. I'll keep going. So the intent of this ribbon is not only to actually define the interior space in the chamber and actually celebrate the wrapping of the audience in engulfing them into the performance itself. It actually is meant to split off and actually becomes an expression into the lobby space. There's one gesture on the backside of the theater that actually starts to announce that excitement or that entryway into the theater itself. And there's an opportunity to actually highlight that, whether it's through visual aids or projection or postings. But the idea is that the theater itself expresses it. The main chamber is expressed into the main lobby, sort of builds the excitement as you enter the theater. If we go forward here, this is how the existing lobby, most people know it to be this way today with the existing wall and that staircase that goes up to the upper balcony. And it's really just that. You walk up and you go straight into the theater on the upper level. As we are planning to move forward, that stair has remained in the same spot. But the idea of the interconnection now ties that upper balcony to the main floor. So there's an ability to actually separate and have different even events going on, or a hierarchy of events. There could be kids on the upper or adults on the lower or vice versa. The expanded lobby, that one grid line right there is the existing exterior wall today. So you see how it extends all the way around, and it has the new arrival sequence coming right up into the main lobby space on the one side. On the right-hand side of the image, you can see how the theater ribbon starts to project through into the lobby space. And it's on that wall that there's an opportunity for, as I say, to build excitement and or have projection or other postings and things like that. Here from the expanded portion of the lobby, you can see how much larger it is. That column line in front of us is the existing exterior wall. So we're standing out towards the back. Our back is actually into the corner of the new expansion. You can see in how the lobby starts to stretch down with the new ramp on the left side. You can see down there, the lobby stretches all down with the new ramp, access to the lower level for barrier-free and just audience circulation. Washrooms on either side of the lobby, one bank there and one bank off to the other side. And then you have the theater coming through, and you can see the upper level connection and the staircases as they exist today going up. Here's from the upper level, an idea from the upper level lobby with the daylight up there as well. You get a connection down so you can see how the structure is exposed, and we can open up and see down into the lower level lobby. So you can combine the two floors or the two lobby areas into one larger event. Inside the chamber, this is sort of a shot from center stage looking out. You can see the new seating, the seating bowl itself and how it's encompassed or it's wrapped with this new ribbon effect as it wraps around. It marks the exit on the right-hand side, as well as the entrance from the lower level barrier-free access coming in at that point. So there's seating, you can tell, right at the midpoint as it comes through, barrier-free seating right in the center of the entire auditorium. And you can see how the upper level ties in now with that ribbon wrapping up and over. Here's kind of a shot from the side as you walk in, just past the one edge. So you can see the ribbon wrapping around. And the goal here is to actually have it become a bit of the celebratory event that is the theater. We would highlight it with some LED lighting, and then it's meant to be actually dimmed down. And obviously it's about the performance that's going on the stage. As far as the upper theater itself, the ceiling of the main theater, the goal here is to sort of, we're trying to maintain as much as possible of the original design. We're not trying to you know, reinvent the whole wheel. We're trying to keep this as cost effective and have largest impact for the lowest dollar, if you will. So we're actually reworking the upper clouds to keep them in place so they're not being all rebuilt or torn out. I think. And so when we start looking at some of our interior finishes, I'll try and speed this up a bit. We are looking at long-term finishes that will actually be very durable. Here you start to see the idea of how these interior finishes will start to come together. Albeit color is maybe not exact representation here. The flooring is a type of, actually it's a rubberized flooring material that has a carpet aesthetic and absorption. So it has the acoustic natures of the carpet, but it has, and the visual look of a carpet, but it has the durability and the cleaning ability of a rubberized flooring. So it keeps the maintenance, long-term maintenance down. You can see sort of the goal through some of the washrooms is the hard surface, but keep them at a very simple yet higher level looking interior finish. So it still has that celebration of going to a theater. It has that event, but we're not trying to make this thing all out of marble and gold fixtures by any means. We're trying to keep it very simple and clean and respect the lines of the original building. There's some idea there on the main floor as well, the ability to actually, as we will look at over time, how that entrance can be improved and there'll be some seating opportunities on the main floor. Improve some seating and access, again, from quad. This corner opening up to quad is, I think, very ideal, given the idea that the quad's going to expand. This will actually change sub's presence to the rest of the campus from that east side. And then there's just some basic floor plans here. If there's any questions, it basically are the same thing as what you saw previously. And I think that's it, if there's any questions.
We'd love to hear your thoughts. So anything, any comments or questions people have, we're happy to answer them. So, Councillor Baticki.
Hi, thank you so much for the presentation so far. This is going back a little while when you were talking about the PV panels. I'm just curious if there's an estimate to how much of the energy usage of the theater, like as a percentage, it'll offset. Thank you.
No, not yet. The theater doesn't have a set of separate meters or that. We are looking at doing an assessment that incorporates like best guesses in terms of what equipment gets used in that. But I will have a little bit more about what that PV generation is going to look like after this. So I'm happy to field more of those questions later, Andrew. Matoska, Councillor Bowes, sorry.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. Brennan, I was just wondering, you mentioned somewhere that there will be reduced water usage. I was wondering what's the plan for that? And yeah, that's my question.
Again, I'll come back to that. We haven't done a complete audit, but we do know that all the fixtures are original. So back in 1967, they didn't really have low flow stuff. We have not confirmed yet what the flow rates on things like urinals and toilets are, but we do know that the highest standards now are in the 1 to 1.5 or 6 gallons per flush level, which is like, we're expecting, I go into that a little bit more. We're expecting huge improvements in water usage through all the public water fixtures.
Yeah.
Councillor Matat.
Go ahead, Mark.
Sorry?
Oh, I was just going to
say. Councillor Matoska. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to thank you for the presentation. I don't know much about the technical aspects of things, but from your presentation, I know that there's a lot of meticulous effort put into this, and that's appreciated. And I just wanted to say I grew up dancing at the Meyer Horowitz Theater, and seeing these changes and the renovation plans is very exciting to me. So I just wanted to thank you for your time and let you know that a lot of the changes that you guys are making for accessibility and inclusivity is very much appreciated, and it's very exciting.
Thank you, Councillor Matoska. That's very nice to hear. Councillor Baticki again.
Hi, so this question's back to the sustainable materials. So we went through that side pretty quickly and the materials themselves are all sustainable. But my question is like, where are they manufactured? Like, is there a large carbon footprint transporting them here? Or like, is that footprint offsetted by the types of materials we're using? Thank you.
I think that's a question we'll have to take back to Stephen's design team, because I actually don't know. We'll have to get back to you on that, Andrew, and we'll ask them to look into that prior to final production of the DD report. It's unfortunate we don't have some of the constructors here locally. What I will say is we are looking at Canadian suppliers, some of the suppliers, and perhaps all of them for the theater seating itself, which is the single biggest piece of fixtures that are coming in. We're looking at Canadian suppliers for that.
The other,
so we'll get back to you with more info, Baticki, Councillor Baticki. Go ahead. Joel.
Okay, Stephen, first off, it's really cool that you're doing a presentation in the theater. I think that's really cool. We've been throwing ideas back and forth over the past couple months, and Alana has been doing an incredible job in bringing up a lot of these accessibility issues. And I had a question for you, Stephen, since you've sort of been involved in doing projects all across Edmonton, as was sort of shown earlier. In your view, in terms of the sustainability of this specific project, how does it sort of compare to other projects across Edmonton? Do you see it in terms of sort of comparator? I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
You know, it's interesting you ask that. By its nature, I've done projects that LEED is a evaluation system. I've done LEED Gold projects, a number of them. There's all kinds of evaluation type programs. Probably one of the biggest things that make this thing very sustainable is the fact that it's a reuse. We are reusing this. The fact we are not tearing this down, we are not demoing this thing completely. We are only refurbishing and doing an expansion that's one of the biggest points to actually sustainability, is that we're actually keeping things. As far as, you know, other aspects of it, yes, water generation or water collection, I mean, energy consumption is getting more and more dictated by code. We are improving the energy envelope as we go around, where we're actually expanding the building will all be brought up to code. We are looking at existing envelope. Thing about materiality is a good question. And yes, we are looking at materials and of course how they're green and where they come from is relevant. Pretty much everything we've looked at or specified is actually North American made. We're not bringing in things from Europe wherever possible or any other part of the world. Minimizing the carbon footprint of all this stuff is obviously relevant. Some of these things, it's just the nature of it. As Mark said, there is not a ton of manufacturing in Alberta even or in Canada for some of these things. So we have to look, but we are trying to be mindful even of the products we are specifying that there's low VOC, there's low carbon footprint, all of those things. That's the only stuff we're really looking at. We're not looking at some of these other materials that actually become, very big pollutants. But I think the couple of the big things, like I said, is the reuse of the theater. We're not doing any major modifications, so we're not tearing down or having to salvage a whole bunch. Waste diversion is a big part of this. Anything we do take out, we will look and do our best to make sure we're diverting from landfill wherever possible on any of the materials coming out of the theater. I think that's probably the primary thing. And then the next biggest thing about the theater as it sits today, one of the biggest moves you'll make in energy consumption is the lights. The lights currently are not LED. We're looking at a full LED spectrum of lighting. So any of the new LED fixtures will be probably one of the biggest energy consumption benefits that we're going to have coming off of this. Does that answer your question, Joel? Okay.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. That was really good.
Excellent.
Councillor Orvold?
First of all, I just want to say thank you for putting in your time and energy into this. I really am a big fan of your work. This is just as good looking as the rest of the stuff. It's very nice to look at. one of the big questions I have is what is currently being considered for like vendorship space and stuff like that. I'm trying to look at the plan. So with the rubberized flooring, then you're allowed to have beverages within the theater space specifically. And with that being allowed more, there's going to be more necessity for, well, people will be vendoring alcohol more. And then with better or bigger shows, there'll be more vendor space. What's the kind of plan or direction for incorporating that into this plan specifically?
Well, Brennan, if you have, we'll let you take this first, Stephen, but then if Brennan has anything to add.
I would think that really there's two parts to that question, Nolan, is the plan itself. We have incorporated on the main floor of the auditorium, actually, if you're still looking at the screen, I think. There's a, out in the lobby space, we actually are working in a lounge, or sorry, a bar space. So that will be like a concession type bar. It depends whether it's a, you know, licensed event or not, but it would actually have that function. There is an ability as well. We've looked at other vending opportunities within the space to make it as multi-purpose or flexible as possible. Under the stairs, the existing stairs, we've said there's an opportunity there, and we'll make sure that it's got power and ability to have additional lighting if necessary for any kind of concession sales and or merchandise sales could occur there. And we're going to look at the upper corner on the backside of the sort of the stairs. Sorry, Shay. Yeah, well, actually there, on the upper balcony where he was pointing, is an upper level bar space that we're going to incorporate on the upper level as well. So there's two tiers to this opportunity that people on the balcony don't have to go down to the main floor on intermission or anything. And then on the back of the stairs, Shay, up over to the right is where we talked about right there, other ability for, we're trying to look at a place where we can allow for queuing to occur. We can allow for people to still inhabit the lobby and not be crushed by a group of people trying to purchase either food and or merchandise. But there's a number of opportunities that we're trying to incorporate. We do also have a coat check area, which I sort of skipped over right at the front area there, which has another option or ability to be another place that things could be run from there. We just have to look at the queuing and the conflict with any kind of exiting. But we've considered those things, and I would imagine Brendan has a better answer as far as the ability for what that means on the business sense.
Yeah. My camera's died. But for vendors, I mean, one of the things right now we don't allow, we don't have a liquor license for the auditorium of the theater. And that's not a function of not being able to get one. It's because historically theaters haven't allowed drinking, eating, anything that would make any sorts of noise inside the space. And that's just a very like classic old school approach to how theaters operated. But bluntly, we don't go after a liquor license right now because we don't want people to bring food and drink in the space because the mess it makes on the carpet is just way too great. Something with this design and that we've seen a lot of theaters in North America do in the last 10 years is they remove their carpet under the seats, replace it with concrete or a hard surface so it's easy to clean. It's also things like putting cup holders in the seats. Seems like a very small detail, but if you're buying a beverage where like you don't want to hold it the entire time you're sitting down. So I think there's a lot of opportunities with the lobby as we currently have it too. Anything that we want to do, coat check, bar, merchandise sale, it takes away from the usable space of the lobby. And an issue we run into, I mean, we have 700 seats in the theater right now, but our lobby only has a capacity of 250. And like bluntly, I don't know what fire marshal gave us a capacity of 250 because I've seen it in there with 200 and you can't move. So when we start adding things like merch sales, we're taking away more space, and it lessens the enjoyability of the experience for people when they're coming here. So by having designated spaces for things like merchandise and bar and concession and coat check, it will allow us to make sure that like we still have available space for guests to enjoy their time at the theater. Hopefully that answers the question.
Perfect. Thank you guys very much.
Councillor Barr.
Hi, so I just have a question. Thank you for the presentations. So if this project does get approved, how much of sub will be affected? Because I know a lot of students rely on this space.
Could you clarify what how much of sub will be affected in terms of will become inaccessible during construction? Is that the question?
Yeah, like in terms of, like, I know there'll obviously be a lot of noise, but will there be a lot of closures? Like, will a lot of large parts of sub be closed off, stuff like that?
No, we do not anticipate that. The one thing which we have some concerns about disruption, and the reason we want to do some of the stuff over the summer is some of the structural reinforcing will have to occur, I believe, in clinical and counseling services. Shh, don't tell them. We haven't told them yet, but we're going to have to reinforce the roof a bit. That's the one I'm most concerned about, but the rest of it, we will be keeping that northeast entrance open pretty much, as far as I can tell. We're going to strive to keep it open pretty much as we can. If we do have to close that corner of the building, we will close it in the summer. We will strive to close it in the summer because I'm with you. That's like the main entrance to sub. We don't want to shut that down. That being said, that's our intent. We still have to work out the detailed plans on that. And that's down the road a little bit.
Awesome.
I hope
thank
that answers
you.
Your question. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, you guys are getting into, so I'm going to move on so that we're not here till 10 o'clock tonight because we've got a little bit more to cover.
Mark, you just muted yourself.
Shit. I'm going to ask for control of the screen back and we'll keep moving on the presentation. Great questions, everybody. Thank you very much for that. All right. Can someone tell me they can hear me because I want to make sure I didn't kill my...
We can hear you.
Okay, I thought I might have killed Zoom on. Okay, so capital and sustainability fund. The capital piece, got that covered, obviously. How does it match up on the sustainability front? So let's first talk
Mark,
about environment.
You're not presenting if that is something you'd like to do right now.
Oh, thank you. I swear to God, I feel like an idiot tonight. Okay, there we go. I'm not sure. Hang on. I need to. Yeah. All right. Everyone sees that? Okay.
You're in presenter mode, so you might want to switch to showing
screens. Am I doing the wrong screen again? I'm an idiot. Hang on a sec. I swear to God. Okay. All right, here we go. So, as I was saying, we've seen the capital piece. Now let's talk about the sustainability piece. Stephen touched on most of this. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because I got to get to the money part of it afterwards. And it's we've already been doing this for a couple hours. So energy management. We're going to lower energy use through the conversion from incandescent to LED lighting, which gives us up to 80% energy use reductions. Now, we already do use a number of LEDs in our stage lighting, but we're going to convert the whole thing to LED. And we do expect a little bit of energy savings, not significant, though, on the sound systems. Generally, improved control systems and occupancy controls. We're going to look at that for reducing energy use as well. A big thing which is underrated is the effect of upgrading HVAC systems. So a couple things here. First, we're increasing the volume, and that would typically mean that it's going to take more energy because you have to move more air. We're exploring solutions, engineered solutions, where that isn't going to be the case or where there are smart systems. And the impact of this is pretty significant. When we did the atrium renovation, we added space to the building, we added air volume to the building, we added a glass wall on the south end. And the interesting thing is energy, electrical use in the building since that renovation has dropped by about 10 to 15%. And a big chunk of that has to do with HVAC improvements. So we can do a lot to save energy by improving the base building systems, and that's something that we're exploring right now. Then power generation. We've had this, we've had a draft report done by a PV consultant, well, our electric consultants who also do this. We're expecting that we can get a peak generating capacity of up to 180 kilowatts in place by kind of wrapping the auditorium and basically covering most of the roof with solar panels. We expect that to generate about 161,500 kilowatt hours per year. Could be a little less, could be a little more, depends how sunny it is. Very excited about that, and it will feed right into supporting the building overall. It's a drop in the bucket compared to the building overall, but it does take, I forgot to look this up today, but it's like dozens, it's the equivalent of taking dozens of homes off the Alberta grid. So it's actually a pretty substantial installation, one of the larger ones on campus, I believe. The numbers may shift a little bit. We've still got a little bit of engineering to do on this, but we're pretty, this is what I'm so excited about this. It's unbelievable. Very excited about it. Water use. So we're going to replace all the bathroom fixtures and upgrade them. They are all 53 years old. And as you can imagine, standards were a lot different there then. And so was the technology. So we do expect 30 to 80% less water usage for water closets, so urinals and toilets. We also expect, I haven't been able to do the research on what kind of expectations we would have on faucets and things like that, but we also expect those to go down. Now, we're adding stalls, but that doesn't mean but that's not, so, and the facility, if it's successful, will use a lot of water because we're gonna have more things going on there. But on an efficiency basis, we will be significantly 30 to 80% more efficient in our water use, which is great. We also think that whenever we renew all this stuff, it gives us a chance to make sure, you know, if there's any slow leaks that we're missing or water loss through that because of the age of the system, we also end up fixing those up as we go. So zero waste, Stephen's talked about what we're doing for construction phase and trying to deal with that end of it. Generally though, for operationally, we want to extend a lot of our existing zero waste efforts for our operations. And we want to use the theater as kind of a trial for how do we deal with really trying to minimize food and beverage related waste, because that's kind of one of the challenges that we have to do with the food court as well. So it's a good chance for us to experiment with that. So that's the environmental sustainability. Social sustainability, I'm going to give that actually to I'm going to pass that off to Erin to talk about, and because she's not here, I'm going to have to page through the screens for her, and she'll have to tell me to go and do that. So Erin, can you unmute?
Yes, absolutely. Can everybody hear me okay? Yeah.
So those of you who don't know, Erin is our building planner and our social sustainability guru. So.
Yeah, so I'm actually a well-certified designer. And what that means is that I have a specialty in training of how the design of spaces impacts the wellness and health of the users of that space. So I came on board working with SUB this past summer and here for this project and hopefully many, many more. A lot of people have touched on a lot of these concepts previously, but we'll go through them briefly in some specifics. So social sustainability is kind of a lesser known concept within the greater sustainability umbrella. What it really means is it's looking at the relationship between typically a business, in our case a building, and how that building affects the people that are using that building and making sure that those effects are in a positive way to those people, that this is contributing to their lives in terms of health, wellness, inclusivity, equity, all of those types of things. So you've heard a lot about some of the accessibility initiatives that we've included in the theater project, but we are making a concerted effort to improve the access, both in the circulation within the theater, making sure that there's increased elevator access, making sure that there's proper ramping, and then there's additional seating so that low mobility users are not relocated just to the very back of the theater. We're trying to give them mid-level and central seating, which previously they didn't have, but also increasing the accessibility of the theater for mobility, low mobility performers, which is actually a bit of a challenge currently. So we have the improved change rooms that are completely barrier-free. We have one whole change room dedicated to that, and increased access backstage for any mobility needs for performers. We also are looking into different audio systems that can be utilized to increase the accessibility for deaf patrons. We currently have nothing available for deaf patrons, whereas if you go to, say, your local movie theater, they can have a closed captioning screen. We're looking into what sort of options and opportunities we can provide for them within our own theater experience. Another accessibility-based group that we're really cognizant and aware of are people who have either low vision or who have neurodiversity and cognitive accessibility needs, which actually makes up a huge percentage of our accessible identified patrons on campus. And lighting plays a huge part in that. So not only is it great that we're making these upgrades in terms of an environmental sustainability aspect that we can change to LED and we can have that cost savings, but also making sure that the type of lights that we're choosing, that the wavelength on the lighting spectrum is appropriate for people who have those kinds of specialized needs. One of the other aspects of social sustainability that I touched on is this concept of community or health and wellness. So one of the major goals of this theater renovation is to provide improved campus experiences and a place for social gatherings where students can have a mental health break. So we have a really unique situation here. The Students Union building as a whole used to have a curling rink and a bowling alley and a theater and a lot of other opportunities like this where students could really just take a breath and have an opportunity to sort of get out of that academic mindset, blow off for an hour midday or end of day, and then go back to their academic rigor. And with time, those types of opportunities have been marginalized out from our campus. And really, the theater is one of the last vestiges where that is possible. And so we want to use this renovation as an opportunity to really reignite that type of experience on campus for students, because that type of mental health break is so important. The vast majority of students on our campus are commuters. 80% of our campus are commuter students. So they come and they often, under normal circumstances, come for the whole day. And they spend all day on campus and then they go home at the end of their day. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have classes 8 hours solid. So they have these midday breaks and these types of opportunities where it would be nice to socialize with friends or have that mental health break in a way beyond just getting lunch in a food court. This also, the theater renovation gives us an opportunity for more engagement with student groups and a greater diversity in programming. Excuse me. Going along with that, it also touches on inclusivity. So with that greater diversity of programming, we have the ability to be more inclusive to our student population as a whole. And so that's a big part of our plans. And then as Stephen touched on previously, we have two different opportunities, one within the theater itself on the second floor for gender neutral restrooms, which ties in specifically to inclusivity. And then one, it'll come up here on the screen, a little further down, but one mid-screen for the gender-neutral washrooms that will be on the main floor of SUB. So that is meant to service all students. And since it's closest to that northwest entrance, that main quad entrance, which is the primary entrance of SUB, it is the most used entrance, having those washrooms be renovated and be that first impression within SUB that we are a place of inclusivity and gender neutrality, I think is a great step forward for our organization. Some of the other improvements on the first floor of SUB that will benefit students as a whole, whether they're theater patrons or not, is the addition of another elevator. So if you've had any need to ride the elevator in SUB in your tenure at all, you know that they are a little old and a little slow and a little small currently, and they're located at the very back of the building in the tower area. And so being able to add an additional elevator car will improve the mobility within the building significantly for any of our accessible users. And it will cover lower level main and second floors, which is where the vast majority of student services, not all of them, but a lot of them are located. Since we are also addressing that north entrance and making some changes to that area, we will be looking at some new flooring opportunities, especially in the vestibule area. I've done some surveying of some accessible users, specifically like wheelchair type users, and they've expressed a real issue in the winter with our vestibule matting becoming essentially quicksand for them. They get wet with snow and grit, and then they go to roll on the matting and they literally get stuck. And so we want to use this as an opportunity to improve that northeast entrance into the SUB building and change out the flooring in that vestibule area, since we know that our school year coincides with the vast majority of winter here in Alberta. The last thing to touch on for the Students' Union building as a whole is the new lounge area that Stephen talked about that will be close to that northeast entrance, close to the daily grind. It gives us an opportunity to kind of create a bit of a coffee shop lounge area, as well as having views out to quad. So we'll be adding additional glass front there, additional natural light, and additional views of nature, both of which are actually significantly impactful for mental health. And let's just be honest, old and dated finishes and old and dated buildings, no matter how well they're cleaned, they're perceived as being unclean and dirty, even if technically they're not. And so by doing this renovation of these spaces, there will immediately be an overall improved perception of cleanliness, which during COVID and beyond, you know, couldn't be a better thing for us. That's all I have.
A lot. Thank you, Erin. So this last piece on sustainability is economic sustainability.
I have a question in the chat.
Yep. I can't see the chat right now because of how my screen's set up. So,
oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Councillor Orval, go ahead.
I just had a quick question. It's kind of a side note. What happened to the bowling alley?
So it didn't get enough use and was too expensive to maintain for lots of reasons. You should be asking what happened to the curling rink. We used to have a curling rink and a bowling alley downstairs. The usage declined over time, but also other needs emerged as campus grew. It grew very fast in the 70s and early 80s, and the decision was made that that space could be better used for other things. So that predates even me at the university, but that's what I understand happened. Those facilities didn't last very long. We had a whole bunch of stuff. We had a arts and crafts room, an art gallery, music listening rooms. It was a very like forward thinking progressive place. And over the years, SUB has evolved into a service center, and it has always been and always will be a rendezvous point. And what we want to do is to continue to build on that as kind of the community center of campus. So a little bit different than what we used to have for games and that kind of thing, but that's what happened.
So I curled for 4 years. So I'm used to the clientele of people curling. They're not usually university age things, but for the future, we should definitely look into bowling. It's making a resurgence. You can go to the alley right beside Nate and it's booked solid. So look into the future.
No, that's not
bowling in the talk.
That's not a bad idea. I will keep that in mind should I have that space again.
And part of what we're trying to do here is to make sure that in the future, someone's not asking, and what happened to the theater? There used to be a theater. That would have been cool.
That is a very good point. That's very sharp, Aaron. Thank you. So I'm going to talk a little.
Or Mark, we got Councillor Bowes here as well.
Yep.
Yeah, so just a quick question. What is the estimated time for all these renovations to complete? So
I'm going to do a timeline at the end of this presentation. So I got a few more things to cover. Like I actually got quite a bit more to cover. Timeline is one of them though. So if anybody else has any other questions and wants to check in whether we're covering it, feel free to jump in. But Amlan will, I'll have that, that answer will be given to you in about 10 or 20 minutes.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Okay. Brennan, you're going to, if I get any of this wrong, please, in this next piece, please jump in and correct me. So economic sustainability. When you look at that space, and assuming that the Students' Union wants to retain control of that space, which I really strongly believe we do, one of the key things that we have to think about is that whatever we do with that space, we can build elements of social sustainability, and I think theater is really strong in that area. But environmental sustainability, we could do a lot of that stuff with whatever we did with that space. What we do find, though, is that the theater is actually a pretty strong economic case for the theater. Brennan and I have done some very, very rough modeling. We've taken from that some rounded numbers. We've rounded everything down to explain how those numbers work. And that's what I'm going to go through right now. So what I've got here is the economic benefit or factor, how it affects our net annual revenue. That is, do we make a profit? What's the profit or the loss of that activity? So that's after you exclude that you take the revenue, you take the whatever money you make, you generate, and you that's after you subtract the costs, the expenses. So it's profit essentially, or loss. We're comparing a renovation project versus a repurposing of the theater space. So existing, our best guess, and the number is actually a little higher than this, but the last year that the theater operated independently, and the last couple of years before that it operated independently of the Conference and Events Center, it was making about $200,000 a year, a little bit more than that, in net profit for the Students' Union. It continues to make that, but it's now bound up with our conferencing and events, which we're still getting off the ground. So we don't have the same net revenue, but in the long term we will. And that's kind of the baseline. The theater is worth about $200,000 a year in revenue to us, and not just how much we charge people, that's how much we take home afterwards. So that's pretty good. And that pays for a lot of services. If we were to repurpose the theater, we lose that. We might not lose it all. We might find some other use that you generate 50 grand or something, but it's also possible we would lose it all. And if we continue with the status quo, we do expect that number to go down, particularly if we try to boost programming without upgrading. We also think there's some potential new markets. So let me just give you an example. So let's look at weddings. We think if we do 15 weddings a year, we're going to net and profit about $100,000 a year. And we think that's incredibly possible. And it also happens to coincide, wedding season coincides with the time when the theater is currently dark. So we can actually generate this revenue without displacing student events, which is perfect. We also think that the theater being the hot new place on campus, and just because of the general buzz around it, we're gonna get a few new events. We're not focusing on a whole bunch, but we think we can get 6 to 9 new events plus all of our new events, and the theater is all of a sudden really busy. let's say conservatively, we can make 30,000 on that. And that's pretty conservative. Because we're designing a theater where people can bring their drinks in to the theater, Brennan has assured me we can make a lot more money off of licensed sales, alcohol and beverages. That's great. I'm pretty excited about that. I've actually cut the number he gave me in half because I thought it was just too crazy to be good to be true. But we think we can do a lot more with our existing bookings just by being able to let people bring a drink into the theater. And this isn't out of his, he hasn't made this these assessments up. This is where we have done this on trial basis in the past. That's the kind of change that we're seeing in our revenues. Expanded programming, however, I've upped. I don't think we would lose this much, but I think that we've decided, well, if we're going to really serve campus, we need to make an allowance for that in the theater budget. So let's say that we're willing to spend up to $100,000 a year after all the ticket sales and liquor sales for any events we hold, and after the costs of doing the events. As long as if we reinvest $100,000 of theater profits into providing better events for students, that's kind of just a scenario that we're looking at. We also think that if we do more activities, we will get more grants from performing arts organizations. We've gotten them in the past. I think this is a conservative number. And then if you look at it, the theater renovation will increase the amount of money that we strongly believe that renovating the theater will have a will increase our net revenue from the theater by about 50% to over $300,000. Compared to the impact of if we were to repurpose, that's a $500,000 difference where you add these two numbers together. And over existing, again, it's about a 50% improvement in terms of where we are currently financially with the theater. So we think it is incredibly economically smart, actually, to adopt the new plan that we're proposing for the theater, the renovation and the programming piece. We think it'll pay off. It'll create a better campus community. We'll make money at least as much and probably a lot more from that change. And better than, and we think we cannot come up with something which will be as economically sustainable for us compared to this. So this, I also wanna note that this analysis doesn't include any potential for sponsorships or partnerships for our expanded program, nor any positive knock-on effects with the Horowitz Event Center. One of the things about the Horowitz Event Center, Calgary does, what is it, Brennan, 2 million or 4 million a year through their events and conferencing unit?
Yeah, 2 million.
2 million. They do 2 million plus. Some years they've been even higher. We're doing about a million. We think we can get to that $2 million mark, but we also think that the theater is going to be pretty central, a pretty central draw to that effort. What's interesting about that is that that money, when we pull in big stuff off campus and the big ad that we're doing for that, the big addition we're doing for that without completely destroying the schedule, because we want to reprogram it more for students at the same time, is we're going to get, upsell them. We do dance a lot, for example. You guys all know that. We make our money, our bread and butter is dance. Our plan gives us a way to continue to do student programming during dance season, whereas right now we can't because we can't turn over the theater. Right before COVID started, Brennan had started using the Horowitz Event Center catering operation to upsell the dance clients, and a bunch of them were biting. So we can already see that we can start to, we've already been doing operational, essentially trials as to what will work in a with our existing clients to improve our efficiency and our ability to make the theater much more efficient and the whole thing just work a lot better. So we think we can do quite a bit better. I call it a virtuous circle. We can have more programming and generate more community, and we can still improve our revenue numbers at the same time. It sounds crazy, but we can do it because we will have the hottest thing in the city for at least the next 5 or 10 years. And if we correct what we did in the past, which was where we let the theater decay, if we continue to invest, again, one of the ideas behind SCF is ongoing improvement over time and to sustain things, I don't think there's any reason why the theater should ever can't be essentially our crown jewel of our whole events portfolio, as it once was in the past. So we're very excited about it. That's the economic sustainability piece. I'm going to move on to the. So now I've told you a great story. I've told you how excited we are. I've shared all that with you. Unfortunately, now we come to the unfortunate part, which is where we talk about the bill. I'm going to have to switch to a different. I'm still sharing the screen, right? Yeah. Okay. All these materials we made available to counselors very soon as well. I'm going to show you our current budget and talk about it a little bit. So, can everyone see that okay? I'm going to assume yes. I'm going to put up, let me just pull up the chat window so I can see that.
Yeah, we can see it, Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it should be fine. But if anyone can't see it, please indicate that in the chat and we'll make it bigger.
Yeah, I'll make it a bit bigger. Well, yeah, I'll make it a bit bigger anyways. Let's see here. Okay. So we've gone through multiple budgeting exercises on this over the last number of years. The price has gone up. No use. I'm not, I mean, that's the honest truth. Part of that price increase is this, the passage of time. We estimate $500,000 to $1 million of just inflationary increases, but there have been some other changes. Can everyone still hear me? Because my headphones are dying on me.
You're good, Mark.
Okay, I'm going to just switch these off so that I can just talk to you.
Okay, so I think everybody can hear me still. Okay, good. All right. So glasses. So the building. So the. This budget is based off of that. There are more detailed budgets that explain everything in much more detail. This is kind of a change budget, what we've changed since we've started doing detailed design development. So the original spec on the building, from the construction perspective, and this budget's broken into a bunch of different categories, it was about a little over $12 million. The most recent estimate, that's gone up by about $440,000 to $12.6 million. Primary reason for that is, as we've investigated further into the building, we've recognized that we need to do some certain structural and mechanical changes to the design of the building to make it work. For example, if we're going to expand the upper floor area in one area, we need to do a bit of additional structural reinforcement. And because we're increasing the air volume, we have to find a way to increase the air handling capabilities of the building. So that's the major change right now. We're very comfortable that this is a very accurate number. We've been working with Clark Builders. These are the people who built the PAW Center, and they are currently doing the dentistry pharmacy building. And then we've added here into this, what are the current adjustments from the original base case? What have we added? Since we started the DD process, what have we added into what we call scope growth? So first, we've decided to do a little bit more on the lower left, on the main floor, with those gender neutral washrooms and reconfiguring that corner of the building. That comes to it's not cheap, about $250,000. I just can't believe these prices sometimes. There's a couple things we're doing to improve the usability of the theater. There's a loading dock column right in the middle of the loading of the theater loading dock that kind of blocks access to the stage lift. We're looking at getting rid of that. We recognize that we didn't originally budget for dealing with some acoustical reflectors on the ceiling, what we call these clouds. So we've got a contingency in there. We have a contingency to adjust the catwalks a little bit. We probably actually won't do that, but it's in there. We've added a little over $500,000 for solar PV, so it's a lot of money, but it's the pricing is actually really good. We're getting $2 a watt per watt pricing for stuff we put on the roof, and about $350 for the stuff that's going to be part of the shell of the building. So we're pretty happy with the pricing. And then there's a Wi-Fi internet line. I don't think we're going to pay this. We put it in here just so we have the money if we need it, but this is really a university thing. They're going to try to stick us with the bill and we're going to say no. And then even more university people will be mad at me, but that's okay. So the construction total is about a little over a million higher, but most of that, the vast majority of that, are these additions. And the rest of it has to do with these things that we discovered as we investigated further in the building. What are we going to have to, like, have we got all the key things, the structural and the mechanical requirements, sorted out? So we're pretty comfortable with that. Second big thing on this budget is the furnishings, fixtures, and equipment. So you've got your basic building expansion furniture. So you're probably going to put some new furniture in that space, for sure in that little lounge area, but also perhaps in the theater, or refurbish some existing furniture. We did a tour the other day, and we found this really amazingly cool very stylish furniture, original building furniture, just needs to be refurbished, but it's absolutely incredible stuff. And then we've got all the things we need to do to fix the theater from a presentation performance perspective. Number one being seating. The sound cockpit is a new sound booth area that we're building behind the audience on the main floor. The stage rigging, that we've saved a lot of money on because we were going to originally have an adjustable rigging that would be powered. Now we're going to continue to use our existing catwalk system instead, which saves us a lot of money over the last estimate. Stage lighting is a big piece there. That's gone up a lot because when we very first time we did this budget, we weren't looking at full LED. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. And that number just kind of got carried through budget to budget. We've decided to go full LED, and that is going to cost us a bit of money. And we're extending it a little bit, the package a little bit as well, so that we can meet the operational that Brendan identified, where we don't have to bring somebody in to move lights around all the time. We have enough lights to set them up so that they're basically turnkey installations. Brendan will correct me if I get any of this wrong. We updated and changed the spec on the sound equipment, which is costing us a bit of money. We're hoping we can see some savings on this though, because these are just list prices and we think we can get a better deal than just the list prices. So those are our furnishings, fixtures, and equipment. Not much change overall in that pricing. So it's about $2.3 million, always has been. Then we've got asbestos abatement. So we've got asbestos in the theater still. Long story behind that, I won't go into it. We shouldn't have it there, should have been taken care of 30 years ago, but it wasn't. So 30 years ago, there was a program where the government would pay for it to remove it, and the university should have done it, but they didn't, and we've got to deal with it now. We are not going to completely rip out and get rid of every bit of asbestos, but there are certain areas in which we have to remove the asbestos. Asbestos we can't remove will continue to be encapsulated, which means it can't be free floating, and it's not going to cause any health problems. So that's what that's about. Then we have consultants fees. We spend between all of our various consultants. Most of them fall under Stephen's domain. Stephen is the lead consultant, the prime consultant, they call him, as the architect. He oversees the structural, mechanical, and electrical. We also have provisions in there for specific consultants that deal with particularly special kinds of requirements. And then we have a project management fee for Russell and his company to assist us with all of that. And we've built a contingency. You'll note that from our budget in August to our most recent budget, we've reduced the contingency considerably. If you follow capital projects, this is actually a really low contingency, really low. We're comfortable with it for three reasons. One, we've done a lot of research into what problems we're gonna run into. And basically that's what the contingency was there to do, was to deal with those problems as they came up. We've identified them, so we've taken the money out of contingency. Secondly, as I said, Russell's been working with this building since 1993. If Russell tells me that we can get by with this, I tend to believe him. Third, and that has to do with the stuff at the bottom, we have identified, should we need to, $500,000 or more in what you call value engineering. Things we could change or cut if we had to. These have material impacts on the end product, so we don't want to do that, but it does give us flexibility should we run into any problems. Some of them are more acceptable than others. This list of value engineering is something that I wish I could see Stephen's face right now. Stephen and Russell and I actually tussle about a lot. But we've done our best to really try to drive every single cost down, but it is expensive. I know that these management and consultant fees sound like a lot, and they are, and there are more hidden there. The construction managers have they charge a fee too. But when you look at the overall size of the project, our key consultants and project management fees are much less than 10% of the overall cost of the project, and that's actually pretty good. 10% was what we paid on the atrium, and we're paying less than that now, so we're pretty happy with what we've done there. Part of that I have to credit Stephen for. He's been very helpful with us. He loves this building and the architectural heritage it represents. So we're very happy about that. But that's not what we're gonna pay out of SCF. So that's the cost of doing the project. I'm now gonna talk about why we're gonna pay a little bit less. And this is where it gets more iffy. I can give you ranges, I can't give you specifics yet. But those ranges, we've then modeled against financing scenarios. And we have a specific goal in mind for how much we want this project to cost as a proportion of SCF revenue. So even though there will be some changes in how much net it costs us after our partners and donations and all that come in, we've set a target for how expensive this is going to be as a proportion of the SCF revenue. And that proportion has not changed from when we initially proposed it to council last year. So we've been very good about keeping to a particular target for how we use SCF. And I'm very proud of that because that is the key, I think, to good financial planning. So next thing I want to talk about here is financing requirements. So at the top here, you see three scenarios: a pessimistic scenario, a mid-range scenario, and an optimistic scenario. If we assume the project's going to cost $17.5 million, which is that's a lot of money, I could retire very, very nicely on that. That's too much, so we need to cut that down as much as we can. So how do we figure that out? Let's look at all the ways in which we can defray that cost. The first one is fundraising. So traditional donor and alumni fundraising. We did a report in 2018 by a company called Vitrio Consulting. They were recommended to us by the advancement unit of the university, the university's fundraisers, to do a study on what they thought we could obtain if we did an effective fundraising campaign just with former SU executives. I think their number came in too high, but they came in with a number of $3 million potentially from past Joel and Alanis. They also identified one potential, they haven't given us the name because it was an anonymous survey, but they did say that at least one of them that they talked to, they thought was a potential six-figure donation candidate. So there's some money out there. We also think, however, that we haven't factored in corporate fundraising yet, or a buy a seat program, or things like that. So we're going to have, that's what we're going to spin up this year. Once this project gets approved, we know it's going ahead, then we have something to sell, and we're going to start working on that fundraising campaign so that while it's being constructed, we have the campaign in full swing. Sometime about a year from now, we'll start really hammering that, is the idea. I calculated this based on a range of outcomes. The worst case, I think we can probably get 3% of our construction cost. We can raise 3% of the money. In the best case, 15%. In the mid case, 8%. And you'll see here, that's where the numbers come in. So that's money that we don't have to borrow. That's money that we would hope to get from donors. I don't know which of those is going to come to fruition. because this is not something the SU has done. We did do it actually, we did try it once in the past. It didn't go well. This was like 30 years ago. We don't know how this is going to turn out. So I've taken a very conservative one on the low end, because I do believe we're going to get $500,000. I do believe that. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty comfortable. And I think we could do really well too. We'll see. Then we have the second category of funding is grants. We've already gotten a grant that we're applying to this project, or specifically to the washrooms on the main floor. We're allocating $50,000 from that grant to this project. There are several big grants that we can get. One is $1 million community facility enhancement program grant. We've gotten CFEP grants, small CFEP grants before, but there's a major program category that we plan to apply for. We can get up to $1 million there. Whether we do or not, I don't know. The federal government has in the past, I think they're out of money now, but they'll probably replenish it. They have a Cultural Spaces Canada capital granting program that we will pursue. And they're also going to have a green building kind of fund as part of the pandemic recovery. So we see a number of potential avenues for us to gain substantial grant revenue, and I've given a range of options there. Third area is partner contributions. So partner contributions is basically what the university will give us if we do stuff, how they will cost share certain things that help them. So right now the university pays all of our utilities. So because they pay all of our utilities, if we put solar on where we're using less utilities, they will give us credit for all the solar that, all the energy that creates, that generates for 15 years. Our system, we expect to have a payback somewhere on the order of 25 years or so. We have to calculate that still. And that means that we expect to get about half of that money back. And that's what that partner contribution currently reflects. We also do expect, I actually expect them to give us more, but that more part will also be tied to an increased cost. Like they will pay an extra cost to help us upgrade our HVAC systems. I'm gonna ask them about that. So that's another piece, but it's immaterial to the calculation, so I left it out. And then finally, when you're talking about financing, you're talking about long-term financing. And the financing is gonna be a tricky part. I'm not gonna lie about it. Alana and I are still trying to get a meeting set up with the university because they need to help us with this for a number of reasons. And we haven't been able to meet with them yet. COVID, what can I say? And we don't know how long it'll take to get some of these things approved, but we want to hit our timelines. So I'll come to this in a little bit, but the upshot is that we will, because of this year, we will not be able to expend all of the money that we are going to collect in CSF this year. So we're going to have an unexpected windfall, and we can use that windfall. We're hoping to use that windfall to fund the initial stages of the next stages of planning and the first initial parts of perhaps demolition or something like that. So that's what this first year CFS surplus is about. That's money we wouldn't have to finance. We'll have the money from this year and we can just throw it right at the program. That's always been kind of part of the plan, because we're not going to spend all the money in the first year because we haven't got the project up and running. So that's money that would go to this project anyways. But we're going to have that cash. That's cash that we will not have to finance. So that reduces our financial burden for financing down. And at the bottom, you'll see that $17.5 million project now goes from about 12.8 on the best case scenario to about 16.2 on a pessimistic scenario in terms of what we'll actually have to finance. So then, what does that look like? Okay, so the last thing there is financing. When we're doing our financing, and the whole intention of this for the theater project has been for it to fall between 50 to 55% of the annual revenue of the fee. What that means is that we want to maintain a huge, this is the single biggest thing that the fund is going to do for probably two decades. I mean, that's the honest truth. But it is, but we want to, so we want to keep that to be the single biggest thing. It's the biggest thing. So if it is only but if we're doing double what we're doing, the scale of what we're doing outside of the theater is roughly equal to the theater. Think about what we're doing with the theater. We're going to be able to do a tremendous amount of stuff. This is all part of what we envisioned when we actually set the fee as it is. And it's one of the things that we'll have to review, because if we do well in fundraising in that, we may not need as much of the fee, may be able to go down without having any impact on CSF, SCF. That's kind of the idea there. What we've done here, and I'll leave this for you, I won't go into it in any great detail, but what we've got is a bunch of scenarios for different interest rates and different loan terms. And our general goal is to try to keep, is to get as close to this 50 to 55% has a maximum spend out of SCF for this, for financing per year. These numbers basically show that we think that we have a realistic path to achieve that, regardless of what financing mechanism we follow. That's the upshot of it. Basically, we're going to be able to afford the thing. If we raise a bunch more money, we're going to do even better. And when this comes back to council, it'll come back in two parts. The first part will be to approve the program at the budget, the expenditure budget, subject to financing. And so we will start with the, once we bring that forward to the next phase, and this is going to get into the timeline bit. If council chooses to proceed with this project, what we'll proceed with first is the next phase of planning. And while we're doing that, we will solidify the financial arrangements, and then we'll bring the financial arrangements back to council for final approval. Council will approve in a week or so, whenever, if it comes, if SCFC sends it forward, council will approve the project, the amount of, and the willingness to fund the project, but they will be withholding approval of the financing arrangement. So let's be clear about that. There's not going to be a second chance to kill this project if you absolutely hate it. But what there will be is a chance to challenge the financing, because it's important. I mean, I have to be accountable to you. The executive have to be accountable to you. But we also have a bylaw about we can't enter into contracts without the approval of council that don't meet certain conditions. So we're bringing it back for that. That's a lot of content, and I'm really sorry about that. I'm happy to go into detail with anybody who wants over all of this, but we're getting late, and I want to give a chance to have a few questions from people, and I still got a couple things to cover. Is that all right if I move on to the next piece? Does anybody have any objection to that? All right. Seeing none, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, so the next one is timeline. So we got a great question from Omalon about timeline. And here is what we are, so I think Russell's in on this, might be listening in on this question. I haven't actually confirmed all this with Russell. This is my best understanding of it, and we're going to fix it where I've made mistakes, but it's the general picture. One part of it I will say is an absolute hard line for us, and I'll explain that in a second. When we're doing our time, our considerations, we do want to do it quickly, but we want to do it right. So the construction phase is going to take longer than you would think, but we're not going to be going into 2023. We want this thing open 2022. We also want to capitalize on what would otherwise be a slow year due to the pandemic. So the initial construction, we can take advantage of the fact we're in a pandemic, get some of the stuff done that is more disruptive earlier on. And then next year, we still think it's going to take a little bit for campus life to recover. So we think it's not the worst time to be doing this. We fully expect the entertainment and events market to come back more gradually next year, but really explode in 2022. And our hard deadline is to get this theater open September 2022 again. We want to minimize disruption to students. This was a question asked earlier, to clients and any other building occupants. That means we're going to use a phased approach for the project. You know, if they do decide to lift all the restrictions in March, and and a dance company came in and wanted to do stuff, we would try to find a way to do both, to start the thing and do the dance festival, because we could use the money. So that wouldn't hurt. We are allotting up to 16 months for construction. And to hit the start date and the reopening date, and this is my key thing, we may need to proceed to the next planning phase before finalizing financing. So when we, if council votes to proceed, we would be voting to proceed with the next level of planning, which I will explain in a second. So here's the timelines for construction. We hope to complete design development in about three or four weeks. Won't kill us if that drags into January a little bit, whatever. We want to start January, we want to do construction. So the next phase is construction documents. So these are the documents that you send out to tender to get firm bids on everything. We want to complete that by March, and we want to start the work in January on that. There's a lot of work that goes, a big chunk of our fee, the large chunk of our fees is actually CD, because they take these concepts and these ideas and they go right down to the metal in terms of developing the schematics and the specs. We need to select a construction manager, i.e. a contractor. So we'll be looking at doing that in February. We want to do our tendering March to April. Throughout this period, we will be trying to secure the financing that we require for the project. So before Alana leaves office, we will have financing in place. There may be a number of reports or regulatory kind of things that we need to, or governance things we need to do with the university in between and the government in between now and then, and we will do those as appropriate. I don't want to say what those are all going to be, because we still have to talk to the university about that. We're pretty confident it won't be anything we can't handle, although this project is still going to consume my life for the next few months. We hope to begin construction by May 2021 and complete it in August 2022. I made a mistake there. Sorry about that. And we want to reopen the theater by 1st September 2022 so that we can hit the ground running that year. So that's the rough timeline. Okay. So I'm going to close this off. I know you're all sick of me. I'm going to go back, but I'm going to do more quotes from this great Planning Commission report that I love so much. I want to talk a little bit about responsibility and opportunity. This was one of the things that I really love in that document. Finally, it must be noted that the opportunity students have to control their own finances and affairs, both presently and in the new building, marks one of the greatest contributions being made to the university as a whole by the Students' Union. This is where it's really good. In a society that desperately needs people of independent judgment and the ability to lead others with some degree of wisdom, an autonomous Students' Union plays a vital part. It allows the members the opportunity to actually and with full authority and full responsibility carry on genuine activity that amounts to something that changes things. With it, of course, goes complete responsibility for mistakes, but these are almost as valuable as the successes. So I love that. Most importantly, and this is another thing it says in there, most importantly, the whole building must serve as a social center for the whole university and a constant symbol of the value of a free, autonomous student government. And we have an opportunity to change things on this campus with this project. I really firmly believe that. If I didn't believe it, I wouldn't have spent 3 years of my life keeping this on life support. We have an opportunity to re-envision life on campus, to build our community, and to better serve our members. And I want to say, we've gotten a lot of, you know, we've really developed this proposal in response to all the feedback we've gotten, which has been so good, and it's made things so much better, our proposal so much better. The SCF fund is a way better idea than the SSL fund was. And the SSL fund is a better idea than SCI was. And we've gotten to the point where we have a really good framework for how we manage our building in the long term. And the really central part of the keystone part to that transformation is this one big undealt with deferred maintenance issue we have of the theater. So we have an opportunity there to use that to redevelop the theater, to re-envision our community on campus. I also believe not we, I mean, I work for you. I believe that you as counselors have a responsibility to build a better future for students on this campus. We can set an example of how moving forward should also mean moving better in a way which respects our responsibility to future generations. The whole concept and why I'm really excited about SCF and about the theater project as a whole. We cannot solve the great challenges of our time if we can't learn to do two things. One, that's come together, develop a shared vision and pursue that doggedly. And two, if we cannot find a way, I've kind of lost my train of thought there, I'm sorry. If we cannot find a way to address things like the climate challenge that we face. Oh, sorry. We cannot address the climate challenge without dealing with one of the fundamental problems facing decarbonization. And that is the problem of old, large, multi-purpose commercial buildings. We really think it's a chance for us to lead again. Our RSU has always led the country in so many ways by making SUB into a living laboratory for what you can do for social sustainability, what you can do for environmental sustainability, and what you can do for economic sustainability. I really feel strongly about this stuff. I hope you guys share our sentiment, and I would like to open it up for questions. Now that I've ranted.
Got a question here for Mitchell.
Mitchell.
Hey.
Mr. Pollock.
Yeah. So I was, I just see a point of order though from
I can't hear you. Are you muted?
Oh, I was just wondering whether the chair could take attendance quickly because we are. It's already 9:15, and usually the Mitchell? Meeting. Hello.
Yeah, if there's just this one question here for the presentation. We can allow the question and then take attendance after order. Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Hi Mark, can you hear me now?
Mark, can you hear people?
I think he took his AirPods out.
Can you guys hear me now?
Mark, yeah. We can hear it once.
Just give me a second.
Here, I'll just rifle through the chat and take attendance for people. We're already past the point and it's a special meeting.
At what point did I go off? Did you hear my rant? It says check AirPod settings in Zoom. I'm trying to check, but I can't find them. There we go. Stop share. There we go.
That's why I miss in-person meetings.
I'm going to leave and rejoin.
He's just going to leave and rejoin. He'll be right back.
Lana, why don't you just stay in his office with your computer?
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
I'm sorry.
Did you hear that, Alana? Alana?
Why don't you just stay in his office with your computer?
Now I don't think Alana can hear us.
What is happening? Alana, why don't you stay in Mark's office with your computer?
I put my volume off because it was because he was like going away. I'm putting him on.
I'm good.
Hi, Mark.
So did I cut off? Was I just gesticulating wildly and no one could hear me?
No, we heard you. We heard everything you said.
Okay. So I think, I don't know what happened, but did Amlan's point of order get dealt with?
Yeah, I'm just taking attendance just in the chat. It's a special meeting.
So then, can I continue, Jared? Do you
need go ahead.
Mitchell, you had a question.
Thanks for your presentation, Mark. I was just wondering, the last estimate for the Meyer-Horowitz Theater renovation I heard was 14.5 million in 2018. I was just wondering if this wasn't like this is a $3 million increase from that, if I'm understanding your presentation correctly, and please correct me if I'm not. I was just wondering where that increase comes from.
Okay, so I'd have to look that up. A couple of things. We have increasing the sustainability of the project has had significant impacts on the cost of the project, and we have expanded the scope in some areas. We have seen, like I said, $500,000 to $1 million, we estimate, in inflationary increases. But I haven't seen, because I've seen from the very beginning those numbers, and there hasn't been a $3 million change. I suspect it may be how we were reporting it. We may have been talking about particular components of the cost and not all of, and we may have not been including a piece. I would have to look into that for you though, Mitch.
Definitely. Thanks for that clarification, Mark. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Okay, so I'm not seeing any more questions from that. So with that, that'll look to conclude our presentations for today. I've already taken the final attendance for all of you, so we do have one motion to get to really quickly from the late.
There's one question in the chat. I'm not sure if you saw that.
Oh, I do see it here. Councillor Buchanan?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the presentation, Mark. I was wondering if you could comment on the risk to general membership fees if the SCFB is not renewed through a vote in 5 years.
Okay, so this is an interesting question. When people ask this question during the referendum, I want to be very clear. It was made, the answer I'm giving you is what was given to them. It is not a review to, first, it's not a referendum on the fee in 5 years. It's a review of the fee in 5 years, and what form that review takes is going to be up to council. The idea there being that we needed to ensure that the students' union could be held accountable. That being said, it has always been the case that should the SU engage in a long-term financing arrangement, should students decide, well, you know what, we spent enough on sustainability, we don't need to spend any more, we need to cut this back. We would not be cutting it back. Council would probably be limited from cutting it back by the nature of our financing agreement to an amount that would not be able to service the fee. Because of that, it does not put the regular fee at risk. So we're trying to target around 50-55% of the fee maximum for financing. If we're lucky on fundraising, maybe we can get it down to 40%. Students decide in 5, 10, 15 years, we're done with this, we want lower fees instead. That's fine too. We then cut everything down, but except for anything which is required to meet any existing financial obligations. There is no other way to do it. It is not a bait and switch. It is simply the fact of the matter. The whole idea behind CSF, as it was explained to, sorry, SCF, as it was explained to students in the campaign materials, is to take a more strategic and long-term approach to how we manage our capital needs so that we don't have a situation like they do in UBC where students are paying $120 a year for a new building. Now, it's a nice new building, don't get me wrong, I love their building, but they're paying $120, $125 a year for it, or other schools which are paying substantially more for something which is nice, but not necessarily any nicer than what we have. So the idea is, no, it's not going to threaten our base fees, because whatever happens to the SCF, the portion that is tied up in long-term financing will essentially be untouchable. And if council didn't stick to that, no one will loan us any money. Like that's the bottom line. So I know that I have this fear inside of me that people are gonna go like, well, that isn't what, but no, that if you think it through, that is exactly how it has to be. And to do it any other way would be irresponsible and contrary to the core pitch of SCF, which is that we are looking to develop a long-term strategic approach to how to deal with this. That is a really verbose way of doing it. But the short answer to your question is no, it won't threaten the use of our core fee or core operations. I just lost everybody there. I'm so sorry.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark. Perfect. So that will conclude the questions. We're just going to quickly go into the last motion from the late additions today, just because it is time sensitive. So thank you all for sticking around. But we'll jump right into it. So Councillor Badesha moves to approve the UASU audit. And with that, I'll just ask for a secondary. Perfect. Thank you, Councillor Veloso. Councillor Badesha, I want to introduce.
Yes, I would be happy to. So thank you all for sticking around. Really appreciate it. I know it's late and it's kind of tough. Essentially, almost a month ago now, KPMG came and did their yearly audit and did their report to us. And it's been a month because of COVID reasons. We didn't get some papers and then meeting times just didn't line up. So we're trying to get it in for today. Essentially, what they reported to us is, you know, no fraud, no embezzlement. We're good. You know, we didn't see any major issues. But one space where there was a little bit of concern, well, it wasn't real concern, it's just like to point something out, is every year KPMG will send some people down and they'll do an inventory check, and they'll look at Submart, what they have, you know, just all the areas we own, and if the inventory is lining up with what we're reporting. This year, because of COVID, they weren't able to physically go in person and take a look at this inventory. However, what they got from the SU and like what we provided was in accordance with what they thought would be there. So they're not really concerned with this. I did attach the paper, so if anyone has any questions, let me know. But they were not worried. I took a look, I'm not worried. And I'd love to get this approved so we can move forward with the audit, complete the whole process.
Awesome, thank you, Councillor Badesha. Is there any questions, comments, queries? Councillor Buchanan?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to ask Councillor Badesha just to confirm that I have not missed anything. This afternoon with the late additions, this is the first time we've seen this paperwork?
Yes, this should be the first time you're seeing it.
Councilor Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to make a motion to table this just so we have more time to actually thoroughly review it. I know I have not had enough time to thoroughly review it because my afternoons on Tuesdays are not full and open to review all the late additions as much as I would like to. So I will not be able to vote in favor because I have not fully reviewed it myself.
Okay. If there is a secondary.
Mr. Speaker, can I say something?
Actually, General Manager Dumashel is next on the speaker's list.
This is not to weigh in on the motion to table, so it's just background information on the statements, the only material changes from last year. So I'm out of order, so I'll withdraw.
Well, we haven't received a secondary on the motion, so it was never brought fully forward.
Okay, just so everyone knows, the key differences here that you'll see in this over previous years, which are also included there too, is we took a big hit March and April from COVID. So our numbers are down. Our numbers will be even worse next year in terms of revenues. The other big thing that I just want to flag, because everyone should know, is we made one big policy change to accounting this year. And that is we have changed the amortization schedule of capital assets. So what does that mean? What that means is that we are depreciating new capital assets over a longer period of time. So when we built the atrium, for various reasons, the accountants decided that we should amortize that over the life of the loan, which is only 20 years. But that thing is going to be in use for 30 or 40 years, So we talked to them and asked them to change our amortization on major capital projects to 30 years. And what that does is that instantly makes us profitable. Like, it's crazy because we are not accounting for as much depreciation per year. We believe that is a more accurate thing. We had a discussion with the accountants about it. I had to write a justification email to them. They accepted it, but it is the single biggest change that we've made. So, and it is in line with standard accounting practices. They just applied a different they were applying a different criteria previously. That is the single biggest change. It's a non-cash change. So that's all.
President Agarwal?
I have nothing much to add apart from what Mark was saying, but I was just going to say I took a look at it and I'm happy with it. I think audit committee has done a good job in ensuring that this audit has been done, and obviously KPMG is a third party evaluator, and I think based on their independent auditor's report, it seems to be everything seems to be intact. So I think the biggest thing, as Mark was mentioning, is that COVID has made it really challenging this year, and that's been a real hindrance in terms of financials, with lack of businesses and revenue generations that would normally happen. So those are sort of the main things. But I'm overall happy with this audit.
Excellent. Thank you, President Agarwal. That does exhaust the speakers list. I will look to the link to vote here if nobody else is joining. I will post it here just a second.
Question, Mr. Speaker, is this a vote on the motion to table from Councillor Buchanan, or is this a vote on the motion itself? Sorry.
It was never technically, like, the motion never went forward because there was no secondary to it.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My apologies.
Yep. No problem. All right, so we do have our votes tabulated. I did not throw a meme in this one tonight because I made it like 15 minutes ago. Everybody please, it's okay. There'll be some fire memes next week. But we are 18 votes in favor, one vote opposed, and one abstention. I received a note from Councillor Fotang to have his abstention noted for the minutes. So to please, make that noted. Sorry, I don't take the minutes. But yeah, that'll be, well, I guess that motion will pass. So awesome. And that will conclude tonight's meeting. But thank you all for coming out. I promise there'll be some good memes next week at our normal meeting of council. I hope y'all have a good evening. We'll officially adjourn council at 9:32 PM. Attendance is all good to go. Awesome. Thank you all so much.
Thank you everyone so much for sitting through all of that. And please email me if you have any questions, or Mark as well. And thank you so much, Mark, for delivering all of that. So have a great night, everyone. Thank you so much. Looking forward to more discussions.
Thank you. And for the record, I put it in the chat as well. I would like to, on the record, noted I voted against the motion. Thank you.
Good night, folks.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good evening.